believe the affiliates list, because in all honesty, other than our show, there's a lot of lying bastards at Sports Byline. And so the affiliates list might list stations that they haven't been on in 10 or 12 years, but they still keep it on the affiliates list. So,
beautiful.
Yeah, much, yeah, it's a great way to look like you're everywhere. Although we are on AFN, and occasionally we do get calls from people listening overseas on AFN. So actually, I might quite literally be the only liberal talk show host heard on AFN.
Wow.
And I do a sports show, so that's basically how I got
it. You know what? There's a little golf clap for that spot, because I was explaining that the other night. That we as liberals have got to learn to speak in the idiom of the nation. And you know what? Here, sports is our national metaphor.
Well,
that's why when Obama gives a good speech, somebody will inevitably say, well, he hit that one out of the park.
Right. Or, for that matter, it'd be a better example, because if it wasn't for sports, the only time Hunter S. Thompson and Rich Nixon had probably wouldn't have had the same result, but...
Oh, I do suspect we've a busy little afternoon ahead of us. Or evening, or morning, or whatever it is, wherever you are. Good morning, Planet Seaborn.
He writes nothing flattering about Richard Miller.
Because this is the miracle of the inner tube. And I'm Bob, and this is the horn. This is Conversation Radio, in case you're not familiar with the concept.
And a few other things.
I make assumptions sometimes about that was his forever, but they haven't.
Yeah,
and we need to,
they were able to hold their
know what
like
it's all about here. You know, this isn't
sports.
This is Wilford from Busted Knuckle. I just want to say make a pig pen dittos to you. Thank you, Wilford. That's enough about you. Let's talk about me. My God, have you seen my mansion? I have 26,000 square feet and a cat.
Kind of bashing people.
This isn't that kind of radio.
No,
this is
together.
Conversation radio. This is your opportunity
to
engage in extended dialogue, extended conversation. And it ain't about me, it's about you.
Everybody's united as one in those.
It is, quite frankly, one of the boldest
little
experiments in radio that has taken place in this country in eons.
Each other during a sport event because no one knows or cares at that point. What's more important about is supporting your team. Kind of like
we've got a lot on the table for this evening.
I've got to take you somewhere else since you are a legitimate bona fide Pennsylvanian.
And I'm hard-pressed to figure out where to start, but
based
I will
on how things are working out. Is it safe to say that Arlen Specter has reached a place in his life where he can hide his own Easter eggs?
No,
he's slipping. Arlen's brain is going sideways.
Actually, we've got two of them.
He introduced himself to me three times.
I knew I'd forgotten something. That had to be annoying. My apologies. Thank you, News Ninja Susan. Simple email. Kill the stream! All better now? I hope so. Sometimes things just, I get ahead of myself, things get ahead of me, whatever. But anyway, we got a fun little show going on. Because we got fun stories, we got dumb stories, we got silly stories, and we've got stories that they are the horror we have come to expect. And to say that it is troubling, at the very least, is, look, the Gulf is the Gulf. The Gulf is gone. At this point in time, even BP has been forced to admit that it really doesn't have a clue. Now, we've known they didn't have a clue for quite some time, but it's still a little bit surprising to see them actually admitting it. That gusher in the Gulf may actually prove to be humanity's open doorway into hell. And no, there's no guy with a surprising resemblance to the ancient Greek renderings of Dionysus down there. There's just lots of toxic goo that may torment us forevermore. I saw a story posted over at Michael Moore's website earlier today. I found it via our dear friend, good friend, and friend of long standing, Bart Kopp. Over at michaelmoore.com, under latest news, dated yesterday, Gulf oil spill turning unbelievably bad. And the photo of the poor dead dolphin lying on the sugar-white sands of the Gulf, makes you just want to march some BP executives right down there, right down there next to them. It does. It does. Of course, that's all. I'm only using a metaphor. I'm not really saying that we should march any BP executives right down there next to the dolphin and let them get all dolphin-like. I'm using a Brad Goering metaphor. You know, I have to pay him a penny every time I say metaphor now, because he trademarked it when he advocated the open season on liberals. Which reminds me, I got an email. I got an email from our buddy Jack, who is down Louisiana way. And Jack said, I'm looking for his email now. It'll only take me a minute. There's Jack. He said, dude, this blew me away. The segment and clip you had about hunting liberals just blew me away. I had seen an article or two earlier today about the subject, but I had no idea of the hunting reference racist-wise, even though I was raised in the South. I usually can detect this kind of speech and kind of feel a bit ignorant for not immediately getting it. The fact that the Facebook post was taken down could be taken as an admission of guilt on what it was meant. I do think that we need to be careful about reading things into every word we hear, though. Absolutely. But the point here, nobody was reading anything into anything. I mean, I'm not taking issue with Jack, but no, these were the guy's actual, really honest-to-God words. It wasn't a metaphor. What he meant was it was a joke. It was a sick joke and a twisted joke. And just to follow up so that you'll know, the origin of that liberal hunting business comes from old things that used to get faxed around, or they were found tacked to bulletin boards in the days before faxes, back when wingnuts had to work a lot harder to spread their hate and their filth. And the origin of the open season hunting on liberals takes its genesis from an old thing that used to circulate through the South, in which rules for hunting Negroes were posted as a real haul, 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 yuck, yuck, and often had the smell of that ditto machine kind of thing going on. I remember it well. I remember seeing it. Let's see. Packs of no more than 32 bloodthirsty dogs may be used in hunting them. It shall be illegal to hunt them in a watermelon patch or at a fried chicken restaurant, as this is considered hunting over a baited field. You see, thereby working in the ethos attached to hunting at the same time as making a joke about hunting black folks. Really, that is the long history, and you know what? That long history also tells you where the right wing comes from. They really are unreconstructed Klansmen, or the sons, or the grandsons, or the granddaughters. Remember, the only people that TV station covering the Goering thing in California, the only person they could find that approved of it, who said, "Oh, I like it, that's funny," was a woman with a Confederate flag hanging in her car in California. Yeah, California. And they got Confederate flags. But that's okay, because Whitey in California doesn't get bent out of shape about Confederate flags in the state. No, they get bent out of shape about seeing the red, green, and white of Old Mexico. Because that's the real threat. Not violent, eliminationist, murderous, homicidal white folks. No. The Mexicans. That's the threat to California. Amazing, isn't it? Yeah. How did I get there? Well, anyway, backing up. The story that was posted from Tribune News Services over at michaelmoore.com quoted Jeremy Jackson, a professor of oceanography at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography in La Jolla, California, saying, "It's going to be unbelievably bad. This is a problem that won't go away for a decade." I can believe that. I can believe it won't go away for a century. How long are we waiting for the after effects of the Exxon Valdez to get straightened out? Right. We're still waiting. It ain't over. It may never be over. Ecosystems are fragile things. And Mother Earth will not tolerate lies. And Mother Earth will tell everything that has ever been done to it. I've mentioned before that I had some small amount of training in archaeology. And I remember being amazed on the dig, the fact that once we cleared away the grass and that top layer, that you could go down a foot and you could still see the scars that the plows had left in the land, where the farmers migrating into, in that case, southwest Tennessee, had gone helter-skelter and willy-nilly over an ancient city, a huge ancient city of native peoples, and literally mowed down Indian mounds so they could get a little more cotton in the ground. Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be unbelievably bad on the Gulf Coast. The Gulf Coast is a porous place. It is a different coastline than what was present in Alaska, even. Much more porous. Much more places for the oil to migrate and hide and sink in and be regurgitated back out numerous times in an endless cycle of poison and filth and grim death. Bill Nelson, who never quite had the nerve to be the real liberal that Florida needed, but did manage to oppose offshore drilling, said it's his worst nightmare if the oil flows for nearly 3 months more until the relief well is complete. He said, "It's going to cover up the Gulf Coast, and the wind is eventually going to keep it going south, and it's going to get into the loop current. And then, hello, Savannah! Hello, Charleston! Hello, Virginia Beach." I wonder if maybe Pat Robertson can pray the tar balls away from Virginia Beach, which is the home of the Christian Broadcasting Network. But the thing that blew me away in these this compilation from Tribune News reports was this fact. You know, because I forget who it was on the show last night said, "Why aren't we talking about the 11 people that were killed?" And why indeed? But I do know now, having read this, why we're not talking about the ones who survived. I know well. This is a simple little statement. After floating for hours in lifeboats after the disaster, platform workers were greeted by officials on shore, asking them to sign statements that they had no, quote, first-hand or personal knowledge of the incident. "These men are told they have to sign these statements or they can't go home," said Tony Busby, a Houston-based attorney for 10 Transocean workers. Can you imagine that? You have literally just gotten away with your life. And the minute your feet hit shore, you're met by some pettifogging lawyer from the company telling you that the only way you can go home is if you sign away your rights to tell the truth. And this is tolerated in America. It's not only tolerated, it's actively encouraged by our oligarchic corporocratic culture. Greetings. Sign this release or you can't go home. Man, those were roughnecks. Why didn't it amazes me that there wasn't a story out that one of the roughnecks looked down at what was on it after surviving in that boat and just hauled his fist all the way back to the middle of the Gulf of Mexico and knocked that pettifogging corporate lawyer for a damn loop. There are good lawyers. We heard from a couple of them last night. And there are bad lawyers. And the bad lawyers met those workers at the shore. There are a ton of stories out there for us this evening. And thanks to Maura for also pointing out that I had the stream running, the old show running behind me. Sometimes I have competence issues here. Someday I'll have a producer and a phone answerer, all kinds of stuff. Who knows? I played the lottery last night. I checked my ticket today. It was a dud, but you know what? We can play again tomorrow. You cannot win if you do not play. And I'm sure I'll get emailed. And Bob, you know nobody wins that stuff. It's all a fraud. Nobody wins. It's all ginned up. And, the same company that produced the landing on the moon produces. No. See, I know of one winner because Jack Whitaker was from West Virginia, and it ruined his life. But that's because he was a right-wing a fundamentalist asshole who didn't know how to deal with the money. I know what'll happen if we ever win the lottery. Oh, Lord, I know what'll happen. And it won't be a Jack Whitaker story. A reminder for you, if I may. Glenn, our buddy in the UK, has pledged $250 in matching funds if the rest of the Horn family will pony up $250 in whether it be $5, $10, or a lump of $250. It matters not. By close of program tomorrow night, Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So we have about 27 hours to raise what is now $180, because we have received 70. And hopefully you can we can meet Glenn's challenge and at least get the Horn halfway through its May fundraising, or close to halfway, by the halfway mark of the month. So, please, if you can. If you can't, it's understandable. Because really, what we have going on here is rather an amazing little model. Anybody who wants to can go and download the podcasts. Anyone who wants to can go and listen to the archives at whiterosesociety.org, download it, send it to your friends, feed it to your cat. It matters not. And there's no bill. You can listen to the live stream, and Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org never sends a bill, nor do we. The only way we continue to exist is because those who can support the Horn do support the Horn, so that everyone who wants to listen to the Horn are able to. If you will pardon my little reversion into my Baptist upbringing in the basement of the Baptist church with the little old blue-haired ladies, it kind of reminds me of the way the early church functioned. We held all things in common and shared them for the good of all. That's exactly how the Horn works. No one seeks glory from me on out to anyone listening. We simply try to put the program out there and the network out there for anyone who would like to listen to it. And those who are able make it possible for those who are not. And to my way of thinking, that's beautiful. And because of all that, you don't have to listen to any ads encouraging you to buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is at its highest levels ever. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. And then as soon as that's over, we'll run another commercial saying, do you have gold teeth falling out of your head? We're buying your old gold teeth. There's never been a better time to sell gold. And after you've sold us your gold, you can go to sleep on your Swedish mattress. Watch, we're going to drop a bowling ball being held up by this amazing vacuum cleaner onto the Swedish mattress, and it will not even make a dent, either in your shin or in the mattress. Isn't it nice not to have to put up with that kind of stuff? Well, the only reason it works that way is because of your support, for which we are eternally grateful. Eternally grateful. Now, other serious stuff, or not so serious, or just insane. Yeah, the BP thing. You kind of got to hear this to believe it. BP has gotten to the point where they just say, we have no idea what's going on. Last night I suggested that Dr. Evil is secretly running BP, but it's beginning to look like it's more along the lines of Boris Badenov. Or maybe Sergeant Schultz. Because BP knows nothing. Really.
This is the Financial Times, and there's it says a spreading stain, BP oil spill, the impact of the fatal Gulf of Mexico explosion will go beyond the damage to the environment. And I'm trying to get an assessment of what we knew about the spill and at what point. It says the first estimate.
This, by the way, is Senator Mike Barrasso.
It was still deceptively reassuring, suggesting that the leak was just 1,000 barrels a day, and that was the date. And then
My bad, John Barrasso. He's a Wyoming senator.
Days later, April 28th, more than a week after the accident, the U.S. Coast Guard said it believed that the flow was five times greater than previously thought, now at 5,000 barrels per day. At what point did you realize that a massive spill was occurring at that level?
Well, the volume estimates are based on effectively surface expression because you can't measure what's coming out at the seabed. So this is based on NOAA models and Coast Guard, NOAA, and BP estimates effectively from surface information, overflights and things like that, and then backed into in terms of the volume. So.
Now, stand by just a minute, please. This is one of those problems. This is that bureaucratic, not doublespeak, but boring speak, where you're supposed to just go to sleep and not hear the import of the BS that is being pumped through your speakers at you. Not by me, by the BP creep. Ooh, I popped that P badly, didn't I? There's something important in there, and I want to go back for just a second and have a run at it.
Are based on effectively surface expression because you can't measure what's coming out at the seabed.
Now, okay, stop. Because you can't measure what's coming out at the seabed. Why can't you? Well, Bob, it's nearly a mile deep under the ocean. Tremendous pressures down there, 36,000 pounds per square inch. It's horrible. It's crushing. You can't just... Okay, we'll take that as red. Then why are we drilling for oil in a place where we can't measure the oil coming out of the ground? Because that is ground down there. It's seafloor, but it's still earth. It's still ground. See, the technology to drill the well and to frack the underlayers or whatever it is they need to do, I'm no oil guy. That's out there. They obviously had the technology to make the hole in the ground. The notion of coming up with the technology to stopper the hole in the ground. Well, that really didn't dawn on them because they were rubbing their greasy, oily little BP corporate hands together going, Jesus, look at the oil! And so nobody, what could possibly go wrong? This thing's a gusher. It's going to produce forever. This is great. But Lamar McKay says, we have no way of measuring the oil coming out of the ground. So we have to measure it based on what's forming a slick on the top of the ocean. And not one senator looks at him and says, "Sir, if this were 100 years ago, I would order you carried out of this room and strung up by your neck right now." Because, see, that really is... I'm not a capital punishment guy. I'm really not. But until the penalties for corporate malfeasance and misfeasance are sufficiently harsh, our corporate betters will never modify their behavior. You know, the right wing is forever out there talking, "Well, you know, we gotta put a 17-year-old black man away in prison for 50 years for a 2.5 gram rock of crack cocaine. 'Cause these people, they gotta understand that we have zero tolerance." You've heard that kind of crap. "That's why we gotta have the death penalty. Gotta have the death penalty because we gotta put the fear in them. They gotta understand if they kill somebody, we're gonna kill them right back." Of course, those laws are made for poor people because you will never catch Lamar McKay with a 2.5 gram rock of crack in his pocket. No, instead, he's got 200,000 barrels of toxic crude that run the risk and prove a likelihood of killing a hell of a lot more people than a 2.5 gram rock of crack will ever do. But Lamar McKay is not facing anywhere near what that kid from the hood in Atlanta or Boston or New York or L.A. or Chicago or East St. Louis is going to face. No, Lamar McKay instead will sit down in front of a balloon glass and say, "By God, that is one of the finest pooey fouchés I think I have ever tasted. It's magnificent. And I only paid $37,000 a bottle for it. I felt like I was getting a bargain." Who's the criminal? Who's the crook? This ought to be easy. And it is for everyone but our betters. We have no way of knowing. We have no certainty of just exactly how much toxic crude oil is coming out of the ground. Oh, by the way, when I said that this guy should be strung up 100 years ago, that was just a metaphor. That was a Brad Goering metaphor. See, I got to pay him another penny. This is fancy lawyer prepared drivel read into the record before the United States Senate for, "We don't have a clue. We're a corporation. We're not in the clue business. We're in the profit business. We're not in the ethics business. We're not in the morals business. We're in the profit business. The only duty that we owe to our shareholders is to maximize profit, 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 and the rest of you proles be damned." Right? Yeah, right. Let's go back to Lamar.
So this is based on NOAA models and Coast Guard, NOAA, and BP estimates, effectively from surface information, overflights and things like that, and then backed into in terms of the volume. So there's no certainty around that number. There's a large uncertainty band at 1,000.
There's no certainty around that number. And now we've got a new phrase. There is an uncertainty band
around
1,000 feet, and there's an uncertainty band around 5,000 feet. Uncertainty band is some sort of corporate euphemism for, "We didn't really look into what would happen if anything went wrong because we were entirely laser beam focused on what was going to go right. By God, I was out pricing a new Bentley. The hell do I care if some damn birds get all gooed up and die? What do I care if the entire economies of the American Gulf Coast go to hell? I don't live there."
And it's the best estimate currently.
This is the
yeah, it's the best estimate currently. But here's the fun part. Here's the little fly in the ointment. 210,000 gallons a day may not be the best estimate. According to Dr. John Amos and Dr. Ian McDonald, who have also estimated the surface imagery, they've said that the oil is increasing at a rate of over 1 million gallons a day. And that's where we are. By the way, in just a little moment of surprising candor, on CNN today, one of their the talking heads was talking to the Admiral of the Coast Guard. And she asked him, she said, at this point we're hearing all these numbers and we're talking about dropping domes and that failed and now the top hat's going to fail and they're going to throw mud down the hole. You guys are just making stuff up now, aren't you? And I don't think the Admiral liked that very much. He said, well, of course, BP is the one with the expertise. Yeah. These guys are in a ringer. But you know what? There may be in ringers, but they're not being squeezed hard enough to make the Republican Party pay attention or even remotely give a good damn about what's happening to the rest of us. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Sparky out in California is sending along a link to a news story. Senate Republicans block bid to raise oil spill damages limit. You heard about this, right? Right now, $75 million is the most an oil company can be forced to pay for spill damages. The Obama administration wanted to raise it to $10 billion. Dow Jones Wire reporting an effort by a few Senate Democrats to raise the cap on damage claims that BP must pay for a Gulf of Mexico oil spill was blocked on Thursday after Republicans said the plan wouldn't work. Well, you know, the Republicans would know. Because they're all smart and stuff. Not, won't work. What? What? You want to take money from the oil company? That'll never work. Round up the usual suspects. Senator Lisa Murkowski led the charge against the measure. And Republicans also blocked efforts to proceed, saying independent offshore oil developers would not be able to stay in business under the legislation because small companies wouldn't be able to self-insure against claims. Son of a gun, we're back to insurance again. Yeah, this is a statement from Senator Lisa Murkowski.
The only companies that are going to be able to self-insure against this level of strict liability are the national oil companies, the super majors. And that would create a monopoly on offshore drilling among giant companies like BP. We need to ensure that BP as the responsible party pays.
Huh? So we're going to ensure that BP as the responsible party pays by making sure that BP as the responsible party doesn't have to pay. Bill Nelson said, I'm really disappointed some of my colleagues decided to block the legislation to hold BP accountable for this environmental disaster. He also noted that the plan was to raise the cap to $10 billion, but that he wasn't entirely sure that $10 billion would be enough. Newsflash, it won't. The only thing that will be enough is a corporate death penalty executed upon BP. Yeah, I hate to be harsh or anything, but what does it again? That 17-year-old kid with the 2.5-gram rock of crack in his pocket, let's say he's standing around when one of his buddies shoots somebody. That kid is guilty of felony murder, and depending on the state where it happens, like, say, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Kentucky, the usual suspects, that kid is going to die. He will be executed. His life will be ended. And yet we cannot find it in ourselves to consider what and when and how one might look at a corporation and say, you and all of your shareholders must pay the ultimate price for what your company has done.
Well, see, that'd be bad for business development, Bob. You couldn't get nobody willing to go into business as a corporation no more, because the whole idea of forming a corporation was to keep the people who was from having to be liable for what the corporation does.
Right, and maybe that model has outlived its usefulness. Because the business model history is such that first you start out with sole proprietors. The shirt maker's shop of John Smith. But he wants to have two or three shops, and he wants to get bigger, and it's more than one man can manage. So he finds himself a partner, and they form a partnership. And the law develops from there into the law of limited partnerships. Ah, and then comes the corporate charter for a body, corp, C-O-R-P, corporate, for a body of investors who come together to do a limited set of things for a set period of time. And thus the birth of the corporation. And a body of law develops around the corporation that limits the means by which the corporations can be held liable for the acts. The investors, the common shareholders, are always insulated. And in most instances, the directors and the officers of the corporation are insulated as well. So that there is literally no liability beyond money damages for what goes on. I offer you the Chiquita Bananas case. The Bush administration reluctantly charged Chiquita Banana, United Fruit, became Chiquita Fruits. The Bush administration reluctantly charged them with having purchased murder for hire on its banana plantations in Colombia. They hired now Attorney General Eric Holder to defend them, and Eric Holder cut a sweetheart deal with the Bush administration that was more than happy to give it, so that not one of the directors or officers of Chiquita would actually face any criminal liability whatsoever. Not a goddamn day in jail, not a penny of personal money out of their pockets. Even though the evidence was rock solid that Chiquita had procured the heady, cold-blooded, maliciously aforethought-formed murders of peasants, otherwise known as poor people. Operative word being people, human beings, in Colombia. And it happens every day. Labor organizers are around the coal mines in Colombia. Bullet right behind the left ear, problem solved. And corporate is happy. And the share price goes up. And there is no morality, no ethic that demands any sort of accounting on the part of the shareholders or the directors or the officers, or the middle managers, or the little Eichmanns who make it all go. Nothing. None. Not a zip. Done. And will it ever happen? We don't know. Ron writes in from Raleigh saying, the thing that chaps my ass is that no one will be taken to task legally for this horrible mess. See what I said? After many years have passed and the corporate shills have appealed and appealed, the jury award will be cut down to nothing, whereupon the corporation will just decline to pay. We live in a two-tiered legal system where the rich pay no price and the poor pay for every minor infraction. So true. So true. So that's a starting place for tonight. And other stuff, the right wing has decided it's time to flog gay folks a little bit more. Maybe we'll have time for that in the program tonight. Jim Inhofe has come out, and you know, this guy's apparently suffering from tertiary syphilis because he is mad. I mean, mad. And what he has to say about gays in the military will absolutely knock your socks off. With the, I mean, we're talking plutonium levels of radioactive stupidity. So we got that going on. And you know what? I'm going to take a break. I'm going to play a little song. No. I'm not going to take a break and play a little song. I'll play a little song later and take a break at the top of the hour when we've got the Green News Report coming along for you. I'm going to go to the phones is what I'm going to do. Stand by. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
How are you tonight?
You know, just trying to keep it together.
Well, in light of what you've been saying, that's really kind of hard to do.
It isn't easy.
I love the term surface expression.
Yeah, isn't that just some beautiful weasel wordage?
I spent my life generating talk like that, but I swear to God, they taught me on that one, and I thought I was pretty good at generating thunderspeak or weasel words or whatever, because you know how things of the government are written.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, we are efforting a response.
But I mean, surface expression,
it makes it sound like the gusher at 5,000 feet down is a budding little poet or something. It's expressing itself on the surface.
It is. It is expressing itself.
A dance to damned coastlines.
It's not to be believed. And, you know, the reason these people are able to get away with this stuff are because Congress makes laws that really allow them to just do what they wish and run amok.
Yeah, either makes laws or refuses to make laws.
And I can tell you why. You might be interested in some figures here, okay?
Okay.
All right. In the year 2009, 1,726 lobbyists were paid $798.1 million to shower $465 million on Congress at the rate of $1.4 million per day or $1.1 million per congressman. Each one of the 535, they supposedly got $1 million on the average as you factor it out. And during the past decade, these lobbyists have spent $3.9 billion. And that's how K Street.
And yet, the companies spending that money consider every cent to be a bargain versus the money that they consider they have saved. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and you can increase that $798.1 million that the lobbyists were paid by these companies for the first quarter of this year by 3.2%. Now, that came out on the floor of the House today, as spoken by the Democratic representative from the 5th District of Minnesota, representing St. Paul.
And those are numbers that are scary. The human mind is scarcely able to conceive them. You know, what would those billions do for needed infrastructure improvements in this country?
Oh, a great deal. But, I mean, you're talking about 1,726 people showering out 79.1 million. They're paid to do it, and they expel or give
Express
away $465 million to the congressman at the point of $1.4 million per congressman. Or no, per day. That's how much they spend a day, and each congressman really receives about $1 million, roughly, give or take, depending on who's, you know, in a greedy mood that day.
You know, I'm kind of mean, and this sort of thing is impossible, but I can't help wondering, Jim. What if we passed a law forcing every member of Congress to give back every penny of campaign donations they had received from the oil industry in the name of the cleanup? What if we did that? What would that do to them?
Oh, I think that would definitely give them a case of the fan tods.
Perhaps terminal.
Hopefully. You know, I think that this oil spill, I mean, I'm not worried about what's going to happen to those bastards in November as much as I am what's happening to the people who live on the coast and the other of God's creatures who are being impacted negatively by it. But I'll tell you one thing. There is going to be a bloodletting in November over a number of things.
Well, look what we saw with Alan Mollihan here in the primary that just closed out Tuesday, Jim.
28 years gone.
And why? Because he voted for the health care bill and wasn't deemed sufficiently obsequious to coal. And wasn't friendly enough to fetuses. Stunning.
That's about it. It was the King Cole and the pro-life people. And, of course, his supporting Obama's health care bill that
caused... There were people, and, you know, I'm no Alan Mollihan fan. I'm not going to shed any crocodile tears over him because he was obsequious to coal. But the fact of the matter is there are people who voted against Alan Mollihan in the primary in West Virginia's 1st Congressional District. There are people who voted against Alan Mollihan who themselves or their loved ones will literally be saved by the health care health insurance reform legislation. Their lives will be saved. And they voted literally against their own lives. I mean, I don't think there are sensitive enough scientific instruments to measure stupidity at that level, Jim.
No, there isn't. Certainly isn't. I mean, why people do that, I don't know. It's just rote ignorance. By the way, I did see the movie W. Have you seen that movie?
No, I have not.
Oliver Stone?
No, I didn't.
Well.
Worth the effort? Worth the time?
You need to see that movie. I have never in my life, and I watch a lot of films, and I've seen a lot of films, but I have never seen the likes of which Oliver Stone put together. It basically starts about when Bush is president, and he has these flashbacks to school and different portions of his life and his drinking, swearing. And then, of course, there's one scene where Barbara's in the bedroom and he is in the toilet on the commode. And it actually shows him wiping his ass. You can see the hand motions of George cleaning himself as he rises from the toilet. And it goes on to the latter days of his first administration. And the intimidation that was forced upon members of his own cabinet to go into Iraq and things like that. It ends in 2004. But it's a movie worth seeing, and it was, you know, it's, if it weren't so sad, I would laugh. But you need to take a look at it.
I will try to find time to do it. For some reason or another, when it first came out, I just didn't. I was so Bush fatigued, I didn't have the stomach for it. But you know, maybe now I do. It'll be years before I'll have the starch to go through either Pickles's or W's memoirs. You know, W's memoirs being due out this November, complete with a scratch and snort section.
Where in the world do you get the name Pickles for her?
You know, that may have been something that Mike and Kathy Malloy started, but I've Laura Bush was referred to as Pickles from the first minute I ever heard of the woman.
Pickles.
Yeah, Pickles Bush.
Oh my Lord.
That's an old Southern nickname, an old Southern woman's nickname, but I don't know exactly where it comes from.
Well, I've never heard it until now.
And it may be Texas specific, as a matter of fact.
It might be. I never heard it in South Carolina, but I mean, of course, there are a lot of things I didn't hear in South Carolina.
I got some South Carolina news for you, Jim. You're so gonna love this.
About the governor?
Yeah. Did you send me that cartoon?
Proceed with Vicar.
Oh darn! What happened to it? He's apparently reignited his Appalachian Trail hiking with his Argentine lover.
Well, you don't know what he's doing. First, he's trying to reestablish his marriage to this woman who has told him to go in the name of God, go. You've just stayed here too long for any good that you've been doing until this recent explosion of horse shit.
Well, the last I saw, he said that he had actively reconnected with the Argentine lady, and he said, you know, I don't know if this relationship will go anywhere. You know, long-distance relationships are tough. And then the only thing I could think was, especially out on the Appalachian Trail.
Well, yeah, that's kind of geographically difficult, isn't it?
It is.
Well,
I love the fact that the only thing that saved the...
He tried to reconcile with his spouse, and then she, not being a fool, told him where to go, so I guess he's going to try to catch this one on the rebound. Listen, that man has some very serious mental problems and even more serious character flaws. Okay.
Right. Well, I love the fact that the only thing that saved his governorship was the fact that a gay man would have replaced him, because Andre Bauer is gay. And he was lieutenant governor, and the Republican Party of South Carolina was more aghast at the idea of a closeted gay man coming into the governor's office, really probably shouldn't have put it that way, than they were of having a philandering liar for a sitting governor in the form of Mark Sanford.
Well, given Andre's record, they wouldn't have much better, you know, gay, straight, or whatever. I mean, Andre was apprehended by a state trooper for doing a gazillion miles an hour without his license or something like that. He's gotten into all kinds of scrapes and trouble, and, you know, and has informed the arresting officer who he was, and he's gotten away with it. It's just a whole bunch of crap down there. It really is. I mean, it's really everywhere. And it's, I don't know. Why can't they have a gay governor? I mean, you know, my God, we had a gay president when we had Buchanan.
Yeah, I think there's not much speculation on that anymore.
I don't think so either. And so,
I think, wasn't he the first American president to use the word fabulous in common parlance?
I don't know, but I know he had his niece or someone serve as his first lady, and he had a very special friend, if I'm not mistaken.
That's not his special friend. That's his longtime companion.
Well, whatever. I wonder where Andre frolics in South Carolina.
Probably not in South Carolina. When he's got enough money to get out of town for a little bit.
Yeah, I think he'd probably head over to Atlanta or probably fly up to New York or someplace like that.
Yeah, someplace fun.
Maybe leave the continental United States to shed his wild oats and whatever. It's an interesting situation, it really is, and God only knows what's going to happen down there. And, well, Safran's in there until when? 2012? Yeah.
Thereabouts.
Yeah, he's going to be there. And every time I see that man on television, I can look at him and I can say, you know, there's something that's not right with this guy. He is just not. He is many sandwiches short of a picnic. That is altogether true to me.
And you know, the less people think that we're just sitting here beating on South Carolina, it's Southern politics, Jim. It is Southern politics. Now, South Carolina may be the most radical manifestation of it, but, you know, there's a history there that goes way back.
You know, Bob, it's that Southern type of mentality that is that Florence King expresses so well in two of her books.
Which I am waiting to get my hands on, yes.
And I will never forget one thing that she said. I may have slept with people of both sexes, but I never smoked in the street.
Southern politics in a nutshell. Southern religion in a nutshell. Southern culture in a nutshell.
Well, there it is. You know, there it is. Well, listen, I thank you for taking my call. I just want to share a few facts and figures with you about the best government or the worst government money could buy and who's
doing the buying?
The old expression, a little hush money does a lot of talking, as Mae West used to say, and it's very true.
Isn't that the truth?
Me, they'll find a way to wiggle their way out of this one. I mean, did you see the haggling going on between Transocean?
Do you call that haggling? I call that buck passing.
It wasn't even buck passing. I mean, it was an insult to the committee before which these people were sitting. The way they were trying to, and Transocean has gone back to some statute that dates back to 1851 to absolve them of any responsibility.
There's always one of those banging around out there somewhere, isn't there?
Well, I guess so. You know, it's kind of like the British Board of Trade said the Titanic only had to have so many lifeboats. You know, we're going back to one of those old statutes and things. We're totally outdated. Yeah, but that's what Transocean's trying to do. And I'm not sure which part Halliburton is playing in this thing, but obviously they had enough of a role in it to be there before Congress answering some questions.
And at this point, though, we know, Jim, we know. They really are. They're just making it up.
Well,
Top Hat? Who came up with calling...
Murder Incorporated.
Yeah, but they came up with the five-story, 50-ton outhouse, and that didn't work. So now they're working on a Top Hat. Who names this stuff? What are we going to call this one? Next thing we're going to do that's going to fail? No, that's a little too obvious. Let's call it a Top Hat. It looks a little.
Condom.
Yeah. There you go. Well, you know, we can't have any of those because the Republicans wouldn't be behind them if they were using condoms. So, you know, they got to. Maybe the next one will be a derby. Or a chapeau. No, that's French. That won't work.
No, they don't like French ever since French fries.
I'm convinced that Dr. Evil is secretly running everything at BP. And as such, I expect them to fix the. Say that they're going to fix the well. I'm going to wear this one-liner out until somebody laughs. With sharks with frickin' laser beams. Okay, I almost got a chortle out of you. Okay, that means I only got to do it one more time, Jim.
You did.
All I wanted was some sharks with frickin' laser beams.
Well, if they can get Mothra and Godzilla, and what's the other one? I can't remember. Ghidra. Maybe they can get them over to help them out. I don't know. I'm not trying to be flippant about this, but it makes about as much sense as some of the stuff they're putting out is they make it up as they go along.
Precisely, precisely. I mean, well, Jim,
it really does. I mean, they may as well talk about getting some of these undersea creatures that have been the subjects of so many Japanese horror films, and maybe they could get them to come over and help them out. I wish to God they could.
But the sad fact is, there is no help. There is, you know.
I don't know how they're going to try to plug the hole. I mean, if they're just going to try to fill it full of trash and mud, because, I mean, I've seen videos, and you have too, of the tremendous pressure at which that fluid and oil are escaping, or whatever those compounds are. And it's a real gusher.
Yeah, it is. And I'm looking at a photograph right now, Jim, of oil goo on an oyster shell.
That's not a very pretty thing, Bob.
And that speaks volumes.
It does indeed. It does indeed.
And the photograph of that poor dead dolphin on that white sand beach.
Well, there it is, and there you have it. Well, listen, I know you have a program to run and people to talk to, so I'm going to leave you where I found you and hope that you have a good program tonight. And we'll talk later, I guess.
All right. Well, thank you very kindly, Jim. You take care and have a great night.
Well, the same to you, sir. Good night.
Good night. That's our buddy Jim, not too awfully far away from here over in Raleigh County. You know, I love oysters. I love them fried, stewed, and in the nude, as the old Wenzel's Oyster House down in Mobile, Alabama used to say. Fried, stewed, and in the nude. A big old plate of raw oysters, a few lemon wedges, a little bit of good cocktail sauce. But I got a feeling my oyster-eating days are over. Used to be we worried about, well, you know, Bob, there's a risk of hepatitis A associated with eating raw shellfish. And, you know, you kind of go, well, you know, that's a risk I'll live with. Or not. But, oil goo on oysters? You know, bastards! As if the Gulf Coast of the United States had not had enough. And by the way, over at Bart Cop today, he has a link to that Michael Moore story, but he also includes a map on the link, if you go to the separate Bart Cop page, that shows the active drilling platforms in the Gulf of Mexico. And you look at it and shudder. Because the fact of the matter is, it only takes one, as we've seen. But the fact of the matter is, in the central planning area, who came up with such a Soviet name? In the central planning area that extends basically from the western Louisiana border southward into the Gulf to the Florida-Alabama border in the east, there are 3,559 active oil platforms. There are 3,359 BP horizons waiting to happen. In the western planning area that extends along the Texas coast, they get their own planning area. They are, after all, Texas. There are 499 active oil platforms. So, let's see, 3,500, and we'll round up to 60, 35, 60, 38, 60, 38, 59. 3,858 oil platforms in the Gulf of Mexico. I say again, we do not have the first clue what a precarious precipice we live on and how near to disaster we all live. I am going to take a break and come back with the more stories and more of your phone calls. I'm going to play another song. I'm going to play something I've played recently. I hope Mr. Steve Forbert won't mind. It's called The Oil Song. And I'm wondering if somewhere out there, Mr. Forbert, once hailed as the next Bob Dylan or the next Bruce Springsteen, which is almost always some sort of a kiss of death, but he is brilliant. He's written wonderful songs. But he wrote one called The Oil Song. And I think he wrote it even before the Exxon Valdez. I'm not sure. Maybe it's mentioned in there. But I'm wondering if Steve Forbert isn't out there somewhere thinking, you know, I need to write another couple of verses. This is a poster child song. This is, I don't know. We should maybe make some sonic weapons, you know, high-tech, high-volume public address systems, and just play this in an endless loop. You know, kind of how they play the Barney theme song to torture prisoners at Guantanamo and elsewhere. Make it stop, make it stop. I'll tell you anything you want to know. Just make that damn purple dinosaur shut up. No, we need to play this for Lindsey Graham, for Jim Inhofe, for John Cornyn, for Mitch McConnell, for Lisa Murkowski, yeah, for Mary Landrieu. Just in an endless loop until they get it, for God's sakes. So what we're going to do, we'll sit back and relax and enjoy Steve Forbert's The Oil Song. And then we'll go, it is after all Thursday, we will give a listen to Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen's offering for today's Green News Report. Love Tuesdays and Thursdays for the Green News Report. And we will continue after that with this evening's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Right here on America's listener-supported liberal voice. Remember, there's a matching fund drive out there. This is The Horn.
Oh, the engine's gone dead, cried the men who were there. The ship passed up the dock on the wide Delaware. Then the ship ran aground and the oil got away. And they did not report the big spill on that day. It was hundreds of thousands of gallons galore, stretching 32 miles down the Delaware shore. There were geese in the marshes out looking for food. They got stuck where they stood in the oncoming crew. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. In the well-charted waters of the Nantucket shores was a ship run aground full of oil, we were told. In a week's worth of rough winter weather and waves, the boat started cracking and it could not be saved. It was 7.6 million gallons this time. Consider the danger and think of the crime as it poured out a slick stretching into the tide. Over 100 miles, and yes, it came deep, it came wide, and it's oil, oil, oh, pouring in the sea. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. There's talk of some writing found in the ship's log, saying one of the helmsman's unfit for his job. And the ship's gyro compass was 6 degrees shy. Their charts were outdated, but they tried to get by. And you know it's oil. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Yeah. Atlantic gates. The Argo Merchant was the other one's name. Well, it's sad, but it's true, things got worse for the seas. So I ain't even mentioned Amoco Cadiz. Amoco Cadiz, between England and France. The big super tanker out there taking its chance. Within 100,000 black tons of the slime, Amoco Cadiz spilled the most of all times. Yes, you know it's oil, oil. Man, it's creeping in the sea. Oil, oil. Oh, don't buy it at the station. You can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Now down in the Gulf, east of Mexico way, there's something gone wrong, so the papers all say. And Mexican oil well is leaking its goo. They say it's the worst things have ever come to. Yes, it's gallons of sludge, 60 million and more. It's cruising and oozing towards many a shore. Yes, things have got bad, but they'll probably get worse. If you can't drink the oil, oh, you might die of thirst. Because it's oil, it's oil. And it's creeping in the sea. Station, you can have it now for free. Just come on down to the shoreline where the water used to be. Yeah!
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, May 13th, 2010.
The climate bill finally hits the Senate.
The most important and unique thing this bill does is to put a price on carbon.
Britain eyes offshore energy development as well.
Offshore drilling?
No, wind.
Good.
Plus, the BP blame game round robin while the oil apocalypse continues.
All of that and more, as if it's not enough, straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Earlier this week, I told you about the failure of the four-story dome they lowered to cap the leak. Well, today, engineers made a second attempt using a much smaller device called the top hat. Now that one doesn't work. Next, they will go to the race car, the iron, and the tiny dog.
You see, it's a Monopoly pieces joke.
Yeah, I get it.
All right. This is your Green News Report. Desi Doyen, it was announced today that the cost of the cleanup to BP so far for the oil gusher in the Gulf is $450 million. Sounds like a lot. So you consider that BP, as one of the five largest companies in the world, averages $93 million a day in profits. So the cost of the cleanup so far to BP,
Oh, about 5 days' profit.
Gosh, it's almost a bargain.
It pays off, doesn't it? You remember that the Exxon Valdez spill, they were fined some $5 billion for that oil spill. George Bush's Supreme Court ended up lowering that to less than $1 billion. So, yeah, being sloppy, violating safety regulations seems to pay off for these companies, unfortunately.
Now onto the news. Britain is expanding its own offshore energy development. The British government announced plans this week to expand its successful offshore wind farms, which within the next 10 years will power an additional 1.4 million homes.
So they're adding wind farms offshore. My gosh, I hope that doesn't cause a deadly offshore wind spill.
Indeed. After months of delays, Massachusetts Senator John Kerry and Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman have finally introduced their comprehensive climate and clean energy bill called the American Power Act.
Sans that sissy Senator Graham who pulled out at the last minute.
That's right.
Because he's a sissy.
Here's John Kerry introducing the bill.
We're weighed down by a broken energy policy built on a dangerous addiction to foreign oil. We're threatened by the impacts of a changing climate. And right now, as one of the worst oil spills in our nation's history washes onto our shores, no one can doubt how urgently we need a new energy policy in this country. Now is the time to take action.
Some general highlights. The bill matches the targets in the Waxman-Markey House bill. That's a 17% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2020. The bill in its current form focuses on reducing carbon pollution only from the biggest emitters, like coal-fired power plants, refineries, and factories, and has plenty of support for nuclear energy and coal. Now, although it doesn't call it cap and trade, it appears something to that effect will start in 2025. It also invests billions in green transportation initiatives and clean energy funding, but it does restrict the EPA's power to regulate pollution under the Clean Air Act.
Lots to talk about here. I suspect we'll have to talk about this in the coming weeks. But now, with Graham having pulled out, the only Republican who had been working on this bill, is there any chance of the Senate passing this legislation in time to reconcile it with the House version, which has already passed before the upcoming elections, when it's believed that Democrats may have smaller majorities in both houses this November?
It's unknown if they'll be able to attract enough Republicans to support it, but frankly, if they don't do it now, it's likely they never will.
Dave Roberts at Grist says that if it doesn't pass by November, it's likely that this bill may not come up again for another 10 years.
And now on to the latest in the BP oil spill disaster. At least 4 million gallons of oil have now spilled in the Gulf. Federal officials forecast the oil will hit the coast by this weekend. Criminal charges may be filed against one or more of the companies involved. BP is positioning a second, smaller containment dome that they're calling the Top Hat.
The Top Hat.
Yes.
How friendly.
On the seafloor. They hope it won't have the same problems as that larger containment dome that failed, but we won't know if it's working until later today or tomorrow. At the current rate of the gusher, the BP oil spill will surpass Exxon Valdez by Father's Day.
Go BP!
Executives for the three companies involved in the spill have been testifying on Capitol Hill all week, playing quite a good game of blame game round robin, each blaming the other for the disaster. Here's BP America CEO Lamar McKay blaming Transocean, the owner of the rig.
Transocean, as owner and operator of the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig, had responsibility for the safety of drilling operations.
Transocean blamed Halliburton.
There was a sudden catastrophic failure of the cement, the casing, or both.
And, of course, Halliburton blamed both BP and Transocean.
Had the BOP functioned as expected, this catastrophe may well not have occurred.
The Wall Street Journal reports that before the explosion, BP managers had decided to move forward with work on the rig despite tests indicating combustible gas had seeped into the well. They were trying to speed up the project. At a House hearing on Wednesday, Representative Henry Waxman revealed internal documents from BP that shows there were several problems on the rig. The blowout preventer, that fail-safe device owned by Transocean that failed, had hydraulic leaks and undocumented installation modifications. On the rig itself, the so-called dead man switch didn't work because the switch's batteries were dead.
Everyone's to blame, and you know who's ultimately to blame? The federal government, whose responsibility it is to oversee the use of our own resources in our Gulf of Mexico. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. We will continue following this story and, of course, the success or failure of the Top Hat in the days ahead. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, I'm putting on my top hat, tying up my white tie, brushing off my tail.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past
the hour, and you know how to reach the program, right? Toll free, it's 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. There's a chat room, too, and you're welcome to join in. There's a wonderful crowd in there this evening. Kat from Canada is in there. Cossack's in there. Steady, going by CD Oregon. Our old, old buddy Steady from way, way, way back is in the room tonight. Garrett from Vegas is in there. Chat room moderators John Fox and Lottie are there. MM's there. Our buddy Reverbo is there, and so is Sparky from California. Wow. I'm there too. Jump in. The conversation is fine any way that you see fit. This is amazing. I love the way stuff works on this program. I suggested a little bit ago that surely to God, Steve Forbert had to have updated or was going to update the oil song. So, lo and behold, pop culture correspondent David from Maine shoots me a link during the break, and there it is. Steve Forbert has updated the oil song. In fact, it is called now, not surprisingly, the Oil Song 2010. And you can purchase it over at Steve Forbert. That's F-O-R-B-E-R-T, Steve, the standard spelling. steveforbert.bandcamp.com, and maybe we'll give it a quick listen just to see what he did with it at some point during the program. A quick little giggle for you before we get back into the serious stuff. Apparently the Weisenheimers over at the Huffington Post started having fun at Birther's expense. Of course, you can also replace Birther with Bagger or Deather or Tenther or Booger Eater, or just generally repig licking in any of these, but they are beautiful. The way it works out is it was all about Hawaii limiting responses to birth certificate requests from the mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging, house helmet-wearing crowd. How do birthers carpool? They meet at work. What does a birther have in common with a beer bottle? They're both empty from the neck up. Did you hear about the birther that locked his keys in his car? He had to use a coat hanger to get his family out. Why did the birther stare at the orange juice carton? Because it said concentrate. Where do birthers find dates? Family reunions. What's the difference between a birther and a speed bump? You slow down for the speed bump. What's long, hard, and takes 3 years for a birther? Third grade. How can you tell the groom at a birther wedding he's the guy wearing the clean wife beater t-shirt? What do birthers and sperm have in common? Only one in a million succeed. Whew. What's the difference between a bag of and a birther? The bag. What do, this one's good. What do repiglickens call white supremacists convicted of terrorism? Their base. And it's beautiful stuff. Thanks to News Ninja Susan for sending that along. I needed a giggle. From Marty. Hey, Bob, you think that no-talent hack Toby Keith will do a pro-offshore drilling song blaming the environmentalists for the disaster? Oh, I can hear it now. I'll take my boot and I'll put it in that oil well crack for the good of the U.S. of A. Yeah, obviously my country music career has not quite taken off yet. Nor will it ever, likely. Other stuff. Because, frankly, I make certain assumptions about this audience. And one of the assumptions that I make about this audience is that, in fact, you guys are as plugged in and tuned in and turned on to information as am I. You probably already know more about the spill than I know. I'm shaken with it. I'm dumbstruck by it. I am numbed with it. But our buddy Kate, who is now back on the desert in Arizona, I'm sure she has her papers with her in case anyone asks her for them, sent me a link today to a new post, which I tweeted and wound up on my Facebook page. You can find the link over at my Facebook page. If you're not friends with me on Facebook, why not? A new column from our dear buddy, our good friend, Joe Bagent, down in Ajijic, Mexico, Lost on the Fearless Plane. Joe writes at length, and I'm not going to ask you or expect you to sit there and listen to me read it in its entirety. Joe doesn't know how to do bad work. Joe couldn't write a bad column blind drunk. Joe writes blind drunk better than any conservative, creepy, right-wing, repig-licking son of a bitch out there can write stone cold sober. And that's the truth. But just to share a little taste. Safely in the American national illusion where all the world's a shopping expedition or a terrorist threat, no matter, as long as it's colorful and wiggles on the theater state's 400 million screens, the theater state. Joe just does that. They just roll out of his brain like that. I see the writing of somebody like Joe Bagent, and I just go, oh, screw it, I'm never writing again. Martin Morford does the same thing to me. As long as it's colorful and wiggles on the theater state's 400 million screens, plug in and be lit up by the American hologram. And that's a new metaphor. God, I hope that one gets legs in the internet blogosphere. The great loom of media images and images of images is so many layers deep that it has replaced reality. No one can remember the original imprint, if there was one. The hologram is a hermetic snow globe, a self-referential circuitry of images, and a Mobius loop from which there is no logical escape. Logic has zilch to do with what is going on. The smallest part holographically recapitulates the whole and vice versa. No thinking required. We just cycle and recycle through an aural dimension. Not all that bad, I guess, if it were not generated by forces out to fuck every last pair of eyeballs and mind plugged into it. The investing class has put thousands of billions into movies, TV, and other media to keep the hologram lit up over the past six decades, which is to say, keep the public in an entertained stupor, awed, misled, and most importantly, distracted. But the payoff probably runs in the trillions. And he goes on, talking about the hologram. He says, the common womb of American consciousness is dying. Slowly or rapidly, depending on how you assess the global eco-side and peak everything, it is dying. There will be resuscitations along the way, more massive infusions of money, fear, and the rawest sort of fantasy fed to a mood and commodity-drugged public. Still, its condition is terminal because the hyperdrive consumer culture it was built to sustain is itself unsustainable. Its appetite ate the world. In fact, so voracious is its appetite that even if our consumer economy legalized feudal theft, sees a recovery and resumes the level of growth required just to keep capitalism alive, it will die just that much faster. It is not in capitalism's DNA to care about the death of the earth, nor is it in the brain chemistry of an American satiated on prime beef and sailing across the landscape at 70 miles per hour in a $40,000 steel exoskeleton from General Motors to care. Hominid gratification is what it is, hardwired, and there is no circumventing it. You know, if I was just sitting here and didn't have the microphone on and wasn't talking with you, I'd go back and just read that same paragraph six or seven times more and let that burn itself into my consciousness. This perhaps is the gravamen of what Joe writes. The system has just begun its crash. And already we are seeing an armed, infantilized nation wail, hurl blame, and do horrific things, the worst of which we do to one another, excluding sending predator drones after Middle Eastern school kids. Surveillance, witch hunts, destruction of civil liberties, and the government inching towards star chamber trials for those who do not display correct traits. Citizens embracing totalitarianism as stability in the face of the ultimate instability, the death of the planet. I read that and I hearken back last night to our conversation with the two gentlemen, military lawyers representing some of the most hated individuals on planet Earth, that being Lieutenant Commander Bogacki and Colonel Wingard. Not the most hated men on the Earth, but no, that's their clients. And when I thought of them when I read that line that Joe authored: surveillance, witch hunts, destruction of civil liberties, and the government inching towards star chamber trials for those who do not display correct traits. We discussed every last bit of that in the course of 30 small minutes on last night's program. Citizens embracing totalitarianism as stability in the face of the ultimate instability, the death of the planet. And Joe Lieberman wants to take people's American citizenship away from them if they can be deemed sufficiently un-American by some amorphous conservative standard of hateful jingoism. And what Joe says here about capitalism got me going. You know, from time to time, I have little hissies about, you know, the right wing taking advice, and I've got a story along those lines, and it's sort of a throwback to last night's prayer meeting edition. But I've got, from time to time, I'll talk about, you know, why do we take advice from people who couldn't understand why it rained? Why do we take advice from the Bible when the Bible advocates absolutely crazy BS, like stoning disobedient children to death? Why do we do that? You know, the fact of the matter is, as Mark Morford, who along with Joe Bagent makes me just want to not write because they're so damned good, Mark Morford in his April 30th column at sfgate.com observed, the Bible is more violent than the Quran. Wait, what? Really? It's true, sort of. Turns out the Bible, America's favorite misinterpreted hunk of swiped fairy tale mythology, is packed like Saw 4 with wraths and attacks and smitings and genocides, hacked off limbs and fiery explosions in the sky. Whereas, despite its bad rap and rather nasty convert the world directive, and you know what? It's not like the Bible doesn't have one of those too. What's it called? The Great Commission? Go ye unto all the nations of the world and spread the gospel? There are no exceptions listed in that Great Commission. It means everybody, you, naked brown person, no shoes, worshiping some animistic tree spirit, confess the lordship of Jesus Christ or die, heathen. We ain't got nothing on the Quran. Quran ain't got nothing on Christianity. If Muslims go out and kill from now on for the next three centuries, they'll still be playing catch-up with the people slaughtered in the name of Christ Jesus during the first 2,000 years of Christianity. I fear I'm getting somewhat afield. No, Morford notes, beyond that convert the world directive, the Quran scriptures are largely peaceful documents that have been hijacked and distorted by fundamentalist jackals for political purposes to justify all sorts of bias, intolerance, and violence against those they hate and fear. Sound familiar? Yeah, Mark, it does. Which takes me back to Joe Bagent, of course. And what he said there about capitalism. The hyperdrive consumer culture, back up. That common womb of American consciousness is dying. Slowly or rapidly, depending on how you assess the global ecocide and peak everything, it is dying. There will be resuscitations along the way, more massive infusions of money, fear, and the rawest sort of fantasy fed to a mood and commodity drug public. Still, its condition is terminal because the hyperdrive consumer culture it was built to sustain is itself unsustainable. Its appetite ate the world. In fact, so voracious is its appetite that even if our consumer economy sees a recovery and resumes the level of growth required just to keep capitalism alive, it will die just that much faster. And so I come back to what I was originally leading up to and wandered off down the garden path, and you know, that's how it is when your mind gets to be my age, and well, you know. We not only take the advice, the religious, mythological advice of people who were not that far removed from wrestling with the turkey buzzards over what the lion left and didn't understand why it rained and thought that the sun revolved around the earth and that the value of pi, as noted in the Book of Kings, was 3. We not only take their advice to heart, but there's other bad advice we take to heart. And capitalism is one of them. You know, Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations was published in 1776. And it makes certain presumptions upon which an entire pyramid scheme of trade and marketplaces have been built. And, of course, then Ayn Rand came along and completely wrecked the apple cart with this suggestion of, you know, screw it all, everybody for their own damn selves, and if you don't survive the onslaught of greed, it's because you weren't. It's sort of an economic Calvinism with a soupçon of homicidal intent. But why do we take it as gospel that capitalism is the only way to get anything done? That it's the only way to ensure freedom when it doesn't ensure freedom? In fact, capitalism, by and large, by its very consumptive nature, as evidenced by the words of Joe Bagent, the hyperdrive consumer culture it was built to sustain is itself unsustainable. Its appetite ate the world. Even if our consumer economy sees a recovery and resumes the level of growth required just to keep capitalism alive, it will die that much faster. My God, he's not describing an economic theory. He's describing cancer. And here, at the end of the first decade of the 21st century and the beginning of the second one, we are looking at a world that is absolutely covered in the suppurating sores of the cancer that capitalism has brought about on it by its unrestrained growth. Anybody who knows anything about medicine knows that cancer is what happens when you have unrestrained growth. And it just goes and goes and goes and goes. And it will eventually kill its host. That is capitalism. Are there economists out there looking for new models? Are there economists looking for a way to live simply so that others may simply live? In fairness, I don't know. I'd love to read it if it's there. But the fact of the matter is, so much of what we want, and say we want, and talk about we want, green energy, the green energy revolution, if it's still predicated on shit rolling downhill to somebody who can't stop it beneath us, which all current business models are, it is still a path dimly lit to dusty death. But then again, it's also worth remembering that no one here gets out alive. But when you get right down to it, I suppose you could say that even the very horn itself is trying to exist on a non-capitalist model. And I don't know how well we're succeeding, but you guys are trying for all you're worth. And the question is, in order to provide you what we hope to provide you and what we hope proves entertaining and informative and somewhat liberating, we exist on a model that doesn't support anyone who is actually actively engaged in doing the horn, but instead merely keeps the horn alive while we individually try to keep ourselves alive. And that's about as anti-capitalist as you can get. And as I said, it keeps you from having to listen to commercials about Swedish mattresses and vacuums that pick up bowling balls and herbal remedies that will give a man an erection lasting 4 hours. If it's longer than 4 hours, call a physician and say, "Hey, doc, I've got a stiffy that's more than 4 hours long." And the doc goes, "Cool for you." By the way, thanks to the kind contributor who just raised our level up to $80 of the matching funds that Glenn is willing to match by Friday at 9 p.m. Thank you very much. We don't have to consume each other, and we do not have to consume the world. There will be a day, I'm convinced of it, there will be a day when we can start every program on the horn by saying, "This program is brought to you by the wind and the sun. No mountains were harmed in the making of this program." God, I can't wait for that day. That will be a beautiful day. And that's what we work toward. Clayton noting even Adam Smith did not support capitalism as we know it. And I agree, Clayton, that's because capitalism as we know it is not capitalism as Adam Smith envisioned it. But at its end, capitalism still has to be all-consuming. Because without things to consume, capitalism cannot continue. I don't know what the world of the future will look like. But I can tell you that if we continue on our present course, there won't be a future to look at or consider at all. It's about 18 minutes before the hour. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333, on your own nickel. Let's go to the phones and see what's happening. Nothing's happening. Hate it when that happens. Some nights it's 6 lines lit up and can't get to them all in time, and other lines, meh, other nights not so much. But like I said, I linked to the Joe Bagent article and tweeted it, and it showed up on my Facebook account. And this thing is food for thought. This is not food for thought. This is a daggum banquet. And this paragraph goes to the very nature of what I just sort of wandered about on. The political regime or philosophy does not exist. In other words, Joe answers the question that I put when I said, are there economists out there trying to figure out another way besides a model that consumes everything in its path until it winds up eating itself? And Joe says, no, they're not out there doing it. The political regime or philosophy does not exist which can turn this scenario around. Slow it down, maybe, but put things in reverse? Nope. Not when 6 billion, with a B, mouths are munching at one end of the last noodle and the other end a fraction of a billion well-armed technological people want the entire noodle. Not when life is already so damn cheap you can buy a girl slave in Haiti for $12 or 50 child slaves for your Asian sweatshop for less than the cost of a new car, or an American working man for half of what it takes to support a family and then throw his ass over the company fence when he's no longer needed, or bury him in mines as he cries out in Jesus' name, blow him up in Iraq. Stelazine his kids' minds and souls under the hot lights of the hologram, readying them for the labor market. Schenectady or Soweto, life is dirt cheap and getting cheaper everywhere on the planet. Meanwhile, gangster capitalism needs that hologram to maintain the illusion that life is not cheap, and that Jennifer Aniston's ass can be yours in mind and dream. And most of all, the gram, and there's the word, pass it around, that right there, the gram, is the idiom for the decade. The gram is required to keep its captives deluded and sated enough to remain productive and consuming, not to mention hating the right people, right up to the last moment before total collapse and they are no longer needed. The higher owning investing class is safe no matter what happens. Oh, sure, as Edward Bellamy wrote, a few of them topple from their high perch on humanity's coach during the hell-bent journey, but their class remains. Just like you know from the audio clip that ran during the Green News report of the three twits sitting there blaming each other, BP and the Transocean and Halliburton. Well, the two guys that didn't have upper-class British twit of the year accents, they're going to lose. The guy with the best upper-class British twit of the year accent wins. Let's try this again, see if anybody's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Hi, this is Ken out in Hawaii.
Well, hey, Ken, how are you?
Oh, great. How are you doing?
Quite well, thanks.
Not very good on all the news, but I'm just trying to ignore the news because it's so bad. I don't know where to even start. You know,
I understand that sentiment entirely.
I'm so sad, so mad, so pissed, so under. I don't know what emotion to even describe any of this shit. I just don't know. And this isn't the first time. My God, this isn't the first time, and it's not even...
It's not the first, and it is miles away from being the last, Ken.
No,
and you know, we're...
1979.
Pardon?
Check out 1979.
Okay.
AF Campeche, Gulf of Mexico. It was Mexican drillers then, Mexican oil company, but they went on for 295-something days, and it leaked millions. Millions. So this is not the first time. And it's funny how nobody has brought that up one time.
And lo and behold, there it was in Steve Forbert's song. He referenced it, the thing I played at the top of the hour. He referenced that exactly.
I noticed that. Bay of Campeche. But I've you know, like I said, this is not, you can Wikipedia it, you can look, there's actual photos, the exact same thing happened, but they're only in, say, I think 150 to 200 foot of water, which is diveable water. So, I mean, you know, you can do commercial diving and get at that stuff. They're not in that. They're not even in close to that range anymore.
No.
What's this, 5,000 feet?
Yeah. Almost a mile down.
Right.
You know, where we really can't measure the outflow at the wellhead. And that little statement, Ken, just drives me batty. Should you be doing anything that you can't measure at the wellhead on the seafloor? If you can't measure it at the wellhead on the seafloor, then you don't have the appropriate technology to do the work.
Yeah.
But, you know, the free market says drill, baby, drill.
How would they know what size pipe to put in if they're going to not have an accurate figure on the pressure gauge? None of this makes sense. I used to work in the oil field. I hate to admit it. I've been dying not to admit it, but I had to admit it. I used to do this exact shit. I used to be a diver in the Gulf of Mexico, and I hate myself for it, and I had to get out of that shit. I almost died twice. I've had friends that have died. It's the nastiest shit in the world. There's no clean nothing about it.
No, there's not. And the thing is, again, that's diveable water.
Right. That's 350-foot water. That's
And see, this is going on out, and again, the one thing that's not out there, Ken, that just blew me away with that map I saw at BartCop.com, there's nearly 4,000 of these things.
Right.
And, yeah, some of them are up close to the coastline. I mean, like the one you can see from Fort Morgan in Alabama. And that's shallower water. But at the end of the day, maybe it's easier to cap if something goes wrong. But it's still a problem. And it is still a looming disaster waiting to happen. Don't beat yourself up too hard for having participated in it. A, you got out of it. And B, that's the way the game is rigged. We, all of us, to one degree or another, for the most part, are forced into participating in that system to some degree or another, or we will starve and die. I don't give grief to the people who work for a living doing this stuff. It's the people at the top who put them in the position of doing these sorts of things. You know, my God, they had the guys stepping off the boat onto the shore and signing promises not to talk. That alone is enough to damn BP forever. At least in my book.
Yeah. Well, I've been there. I've seen it. I've had to sign statements. I know exactly how this stuff goes. You know, any type of an accident, you have to sign that you didn't see something or you saw exactly what they saw. My wife has actually been through one of those where a rig fell across the barge when they were trying to pick up a caisson leg. So we know exactly what's going on out there. And it's slowly, slowly getting to light. But I don't think it'll really matter because they can string it out. Nobody's attention's on it anymore. It's just an oil spill. They'll get their seafood there in about 5 years or so, nice and oily.
And you know, what it will do with the struggling to recover culture of the Gulf Coast, no one knows. And yet at the same time, you've got to look, for instance, at the lunacy of the governor's race in Alabama and just scratch your head, because they're all trying to out-conservative each other at the same time that their precious, beautiful shoreline is about to be eaten alive by that very conservatism, that very free market Randian garbage. And it's going to lay them low. It's going to ruin them.
Yeah.
And they don't have the common sense to vote away from it. Maybe Emma Goldman was right, Ken. If voting worked, they'd make it illegal.
Yes. Well, another thing, all these companies, the profits are not coming to our country. This is our minerals, our resources, but the profits are going overseas.
Well, it is, after all, BP, and that doesn't mean Beyond Petroleum.
You know, yeah, you can rebrand yourself with whatever kind of, you know, whatever you want to call it. Bullshit, whatever. I just can't think of the P letter for it. It is a bunch of it. Bull piss, that's what it is. A bunch of bull piss. And they're pissing all over the Gulf, and they're pissing, you know, they've been pissing all over everywhere. And did you hear about the I don't know if it was Supreme Court or whoever that made some kind of thing where the filmmakers of the film Prude, about the historian's bill, now have to give over their extra footage or something?
Right, as an effort to make sure that films like Crude never get made again. Yeah. The predation, the intimidation, the threats, the thuggishness, it goes on 24/7, Ken. Because that's how these corporations survive. They feed on human flesh.
And then this consumer culture. Yesterday, there were 72,000 people watching the damn Miss USA thing.
Oy.
There was only maybe 200 watching Mike Malloy. That shit needs to be reversed.
In a big way.
1,000 people listening to you instead of watching the damn Miss Teen or Miss USA, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, but if it was Miss Teen USA, you never know when a Miss South Carolina moment's going to come up, and those things are precious within the culture. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Not actually.
Oh, really?
I don't watch those things at all, so I, you know.
I don't either, but when this thing happened a couple of years ago, actually, it was a poster child moment for just about everything that's wrong with this country, frankly, Ken. I've got it queued up here. Let me share it with you real quick, if you don't mind, because this is worth a reminder. And you mentioning the pageants sort of that brings it to me. This is from 2007. This is Miss Teen USA South Carolina. It's the question and the answer, and you will be left dumbstruck. And I do this not just for you, but for the whole Horn audience and the Horn family and myself to be reminded. Because in this little moment, Ken, what you will hear is why America is broken almost beyond repair, like Joe Bagent is writing about. Because this is straight out of the hologram, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stand by. Here we go.
Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. Or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much.
Need I say more? I mean, that's one of those moments where you just say, okay, we're closing up shop, pulling down the tents, and we're done.
Was she trying to string along a thought there somewhere?
Yeah, that she was trying to pull out those little pageant talking, you know, into Iraq and South Africa, because somewhere along the way she heard that South Africa and the Iraq were problems, and U.S. Americans.
And
I mean, it's easy to make fun of her, but she is a poster child for millions of Americans. And I'm sure that brands me as a liberal elitist at this point.
For wanting our kids to have an education, yeah.
Yeah, as Mark Morford noted, those liberal elitists, and then he put parenthetically, which, you know, we hippies call professors. But, you know, dumb is the new patriotism in this country.
It seems.
And, you know, she's going to make a perfect little wife. And that's sexist of me, and I apologize. But she's going to make the perfect wife to some guy who will listen to Toby Keith songs and talk and tell everybody about how he's pulled himself up by his own bootstraps and don't need no communist socialist Obamacare when he gets sick. There it is. You know, just there it is, Ken. But you know what? You're awake in the nightmare. I'm awake in the nightmare. The Horn audience, the Malloy's truth seekers, we're awake in the nightmare. And like I liken it to Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
We're the rememberers. We're the people who hopefully will pass along our knowledge, our understanding, our compassion to that generation, so that when the stuff does go flying all apart, we can start rebuilding. And that's the only hopeful spin I can put on it.
Yeah, the scary thing, like was mentioned last night, there were 72,000 viewers of one thing, when the truth is out there, but they're blinded by this media, this media conglomerate machine that just churns up this shit on top of and they just eat it and eat it and eat it. Like I said, 72,000 people are watching that crap.
Well, you know, when we're done with this conversation, run over to joebagent.com, Ken. And that's B-A-G-E-A-N-T, joebagent.com. And the name of the post is Lost on the Fearless Plain. And read it, because it's exactly where your mind is going and where my head is as well. I think you'll wind up printing it out and tacking it on your wall or something.
Part of the reason I moved out here to Hawaii, to get away from that that churn and churn and churn.
And then it's also part of the reason why Joe Bagent is in travels between Hopkins Township, Belize, and Ajijic, Mexico, is to get away from the churn. And it was 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time here where I am in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. I was doing show prep, and damned if a mountaintop removal blast didn't rumble across me.
Ugh.
And I just, you know, I'm an American citizen. I have an inalienable right not to be assaulted corporo-kleptocratic predators like Don Blankenship. I have a right to that. But apparently not here in the resource colony of West, almost level West Virginia.
You feel like you're under bombardment all the time.
It's a war.
You are under bombardment all the time.
Yeah, West Appalachian people have more in common with people in Iraq and Afghanistan than they do with a whole lot of the rest of the country. You know, language barrier notwithstanding. We are all preyed upon peoples. So, you know, and then all you can do is try to bear up under the strain until you can't bear up under it anymore. Ken, it's awful good to hear from you, and chime in anytime, all right?
Okay, it's very good to hear from you too, Bob.
Thanks for the call. I hope we talk soon.
Okay, you take care, Bob.
Bye now.
Aloha.
Aloha. Bookum Dano. That's Ken calling from Hawaii. Before I go to the next call, let me just throw out one more little chunk of the Bagent piece. Because he doesn't just say, you know, the world's going to hell and we're screwed. He does offer something similar to what I was just talking about, like with Fahrenheit 451. And God, half the time I'm afraid I sound like that poor, poor girl from South Carolina, the way my mind wanders around. But Joe says, what happens to the rest of us in that great, sweating, moaning throng who have drawn the coach these centuries? What will remain for us on ruined plains of collapse? Here's what I believe will remain. Reality and the truth. And the opportunity for spiritual evolution, which in the end, I think, will include most people. And much suffering. The reality of the world has always involved suffering. Despite the ballyhoo of modern science and technology, just as much suffering remains, more actually, given our increased numbers on the planet. Suffering happens to individual human beings, and there are far more of those now. Of course, fat cat NGOs and governments deal in percentages and rates, so they will not have to account for the increased millions of miserable beings. We have more humans suffering, and not just from poverty either. Think of depleted uranium, toxic waste, sweatshop slavery, than we had humans on Earth a couple of hundred years ago. The hologram has and still does prevent Americans from grasping any of this. Instead, the hologram allows us to believe that life can exist without suffering. We actually achieved that state for a while, too, by forcing the suffering on unseen people elsewhere. We accepted the hologram's one voice to the many as truth. Not that we had much choice. The gram was all we knew. And then let our souls and national character necrotize in the warm bath of self-gratification and statist hubris. He continues. This is a must-read. This really is a must-read. David in South Carolina noting, the South Carolina teen was pre-Palin. And yet she sounds just like Palin now, don't she? Yes, she does. It all exists on a continuum. You ever notice that Dr. Evil's accent sounds a lot like Sarah Palin, too? I wanted some sharks with frickin' laser beams. You can almost hear that coming out of Mussolini's mouth, can't you? Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, no, I just called. You said you weren't getting any action on
the phone. Yeah, it's a little slow tonight, I guess. I'm boring people or something.
Oh, no. I mean, well, normally I'm, like, in the depths of, hell at school, but it's all winding down, so I escaped.
Beautiful.
Yeah, you know. Anyway, I don't know, did you see that business with the oil bill that was shut down by that one senator?
Oh, yeah, Lisa Murkowski killed it dead. Amazing that one senator can do that.
Yeah, no, because I only caught a bit of your show. You seem like you want to tear about our really pernicious capitalist system here, huh?
Well, you try to hide from it some, Sandra, and you try not to think about it. And yeah, some of that ingrained stuff where it's like, well, you're not really American if you don't love capitalism. Damn. You know, it sticks. But if you sit back for a little bit and you try to look at it objectively, and I'm not being some sort of Trotskyite or anything, if you're somewhere that's being preyed upon by capitalism, and it just so happens that I am, it's hard to look at it and go, well, dang, that's just good for everybody.
Well, no, and the thing is, you're right about this sort of hesitation, because we all sort of hesitate when you feel like you're about to go on a vicious indictment of the system. But listen, I think we're definitely on the right track. The thing about it now is that it's so pernicious, you know, it has this sort of cannibalizing quality, and we seem to be at an apex of that, which is why the misery is really spreading. Because like you said, that noodle, that's a good way of describing it. It was like, if you look at when the Green Revolution happened in food, which, you know, on some levels was good, but what it illustrates is that the food to feed the world is pretty much taken care of by 50 million people now, as opposed to, you know, billions not too long ago.
Right. Like, and, everybody?
Right. You know what I'm saying? It's just sort of, you know, it's an amazing feat, but of course, finance turns that useful innovation of capitalism into something really monstrous because you can't get access to it. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I mean, and frankly, one of my bet noirs out there, of course, is high fructose corn syrup, and that's the perfect example. You take something like, you know, mega farming, and then you pass it off to its pass it on to its illogical extreme, and the next thing you go, next thing you know, you've got literally molecule frackers. Or molecule crackers that have more security around them than some nuke plants up in Iowa churning out high fructose corn syrup for America's children to drink in the form of Hawaiian punch.
Right, and then you have things like a wonderful sort of genome project, which, you know, the idea was interesting and you know, thought-provoking, but now you know that 63 of the patents are privately owned. I'm like, what the F? You know what I'm saying? That is not, you know, that sort of technological advancement is not a benefit to us. It's being turned against us, because I'd be goddamned if, you know, some way of curing breast cancer is owned by some corporation and they're going to deny it to people. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's just... It already is. That's what I'm saying. It warps my mind, those sort of things.
You know, eventually medical science will provide a way for our betters to live 900 years.
Well, they can have it because, you know, they're not going to be, unless they figure out some way of, I guess, living in some sort of bubble, because, you know, there's only one planet, you know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
I don't know. I think that, you know, maybe it's, you know, you go through periods where you try to hide. I do that. Because I just can't. It's just too much for me, you know?
Look, that's what happens to me every Saturday in the fall. You would not believe the shit I catch for talking about sports with you, Sandra.
Oh, right. Well, see, that's...
But, you know, every Saturday in the fall, and for 4 weeks in March into April, I'm in hiding. You know, I get a six-pack of beer, and I sit down, and I pretend the only thing that matters on the planet are my beloved Mountaineers, and hoping that somebody beats Nick Saban on football Saturday in Tuscaloosa.
Well, listen, you know, I have my little thing is that I like watching this Australian soap because I like looking at the scenery. Hello, we all have our little, you know what I mean?
You gotta have somewhere to hide.
I check out. I'm like somewhere in Australia on some nice ass beach. What can I say?
Yeah, well, and see, that's a, you know, that's and that's why it's personal for me, Sandra. That's another thing that corporate America or global corp world has shit on. Because, you know, I haven't been down there for 11 years, but, you know, when I'm having my Calgon take me away moment, I'm sitting on a bar stool at the Florabama Lounge listening to Jimmy Buffett on the jukebox and watching the waters of the Gulf lap up onto sand, onto sandy beaches that are literally the color of sugar. And I'm happy for a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah, no, you know.
And they took that, they've taken that away from me.
No, I was, you know, I was like in heaven when I was down in Florida. I thought, well, this is effing fantastic. You know, I'm like the last beach, you know, I go to whatever beach I can get to. In fact, after I finish up with this degree, me and a friend, we're going to hit the central coast of California. Big Sur and all that.
Go,
I gotta
yeah.
See it. I really need to see it. After this Gulf shit, I'm like, I got to go look at some ocean. You see?
Yeah.
I'm in California. I need to indulge.
I mean, I have
my broke ass and go.
I've seen real magic take place on the Gulf. I've told the story before about how when I took her there for the second time, which is the two times we've been there, Agnes wanted to go on one of the dolphin cruises. But and those are fun. You go out, they serve you dinner, and the dolphins, you know, you watch the dolphins out in the Gulf, and it's really just exquisite and beautiful and wonderful. And I just said, honey, you know, we've got the whole family here, and there's no way I can afford all those tickets. We, and not I, but, you know, we can't.
Right.
And she said, well, okay, I just wanted to see some dolphins once in my life. And she walked out on the balcony, and lo and behold, an entire pod of dolphins or whatever they are came to see her. And they stood there, honest to God, they just went back and forth in front of her for like an hour, right in front of our, right in front of the balcony of our little beach hotel room.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, man, you are plugged in. I ain't crossing you.
Yeah, no, that's great. And, you know, and of course.
And they took that away because one of those dolphins washed up on that beach, and there's a photograph of him now.
Well, and then that shot of those poor animals trying to swim through that mess, knowing that, you know, not them, but I know they'll be dead soon. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I'm a mean bastard. I want to take Lamar, whatever his name was, and drop him in the middle of it and say, you swim, sumbitch.
Yeah, I don't know. And also, I mean, I know we went down this road yesterday, but there's still no mobilization.
No. No, that's how the program started, was that goober saying, well, you know, we're really not sure what our metric is for what's coming out at the bottom of the ocean. We can only measure it by what's expressed on the surface.
Yeah, well, if you can do all that, then you shouldn't be down there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, if you can't turn it off, you can't turn it on.
You need not be down there. And I don't know, you know, and it's just what's really disturbing me is, once again, what do these people think who are running the government? Do they think it's just going to go away? What do they think is going to happen when it really hits, you know, late summer? I mean, I'm just, I don't know. Are we supposed to wait until August or whenever they think that they can drill that? I'm confused.
Yeah, they're saying they're, what, 74 days away now? They're drilling, they're drill baby drilling.
Okay, so, and like I said yesterday, have you found out through some engineering information if what they're doing is going to stop the leak?
See, that's the fun part. There's nobody out there that will say categorically that anything will stop it, whether it's a top hat or a derby or a wedding veil or sharks with frickin' laser beams. Nobody knows, because they only studied the engineering and geological side of turning the pump, of turning the tap on, and never bothered. It's like household plumbing, you know. If you've got a hot water tank, you've got to have valves on both sides. Water in, water out. But,
yeah. I just think that, you know, I mean, this just sort of is so illustrious of just everything that's going on in this godforsaken country. And it's just disturbing that, you know, people are still tuning into whatever the last caller was talking about. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, you know? the whatever pageant or, yeah.
Yeah, or pretending that this isn't happening. I mean, what about the poor people who live down there? I mean, are they still in a dream? I guess the oil hasn't hit yet, or what's happening?
Well, it's not there yet, but again, you know, relatively speaking, it's just a tiny chunk of Alabama that's part of all of this. But Alabama is my idiom for what's wrong in all of this. They are about to be inundated, and they are already getting some of it. They're about to be completely ruined with the byproduct of laissez-faire capitalism and free market economics and conservatism. You know, that's not, and see, let's be clear, Sandra, because you know what? Language is the liberal or the so-called left's biggest problem, because we can't put anything on a bumper sticker. Well, I got a bumper sticker. That ain't oil washing up on the beaches of the Gulf. That's conservatism.
Yeah, no, I mean, and the thing is that I was just, when I was listening to Malloy, I was like, yeah, he's right about that. If that oil gets into those estuaries and all that down at the Keys, that shit is over with.
Yeah.
It's a really scary thought, you know?
I mean, some of this stuff winds up bobbing on the coast of Devon in England.
No, but it's there forever, though. That's the, you know,
yeah,
that's the thing that I was, like, tripping on. I'm like, oh, yeah, they can't get rid. Anyway, and of course, somehow I just think that this conversation is just going to be going on, you know, for the foreseeable future. Because I can't really let it go. I can't even believe that it's happening. And Obama is bombing Pakistan like there's no tomorrow. It's like, hello, bitch, that little episode in New York can happen somewhere else. What the hell?
I know.
I'm sorry. I'm like, you cannot make the connection that you kill random people with floating robots in a foreign country. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, it's driving me crazy, the drone shit. That is a terrible...
Yeah, and wasn't that just a precious little remark that President Obama made at the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
Oh, you know, I ignored it. I couldn't even...
Well, you know, I heard it, Sandra, and I immediately had this moment, you know, those moments of clarity, where I said, listen, I said to myself, you know, I mumble to myself when I'm not on the air. That's why Agnes is so grateful for these 3 hours a night, because I'm not mumbling, you know, wandering around the house mumbling. But I said, you know, I heard him, and, you know, the joke, you know, it was cute. He said, and the Jonas Brothers are here tonight, and I just have two words for you. Of course, they're very popular with my daughters, but I just have two words for you, predator drones. You will not be missed, or something to that effect. You know, in other words, joking that he would send a predator drone to take out the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah, no, I understand, but I mean, it's just like...
But I had a moment, Sandra, where I went, wait a minute. I was extremely pissed off when George Bush showed a video of himself crawling around the Oval Office looking for the WMDs.
Right.
These goddamn predator drones take out school children and people trying to celebrate a wedding where the wife will get to forever wear a beekeeper suit and stuff like that.
Oh, no. It's incredible. And also, have you heard the, oh, it's going to get worse? The sound of, like, I thought, is this Bush? He said it's going to get worse in Afghanistan before it gets better. Come the hell on. That is just the usual shit that they all say. And it's like, okay, so we're there now. Come on. And Kandahar, these people think they go, listen, hi, we're going to come attack you in about 2 months. But don't build up your forces or put booby traps. And now they're building up their forces unprecedentedly, and that horrible general is on. You know, what do they think? I'm just...
Well, did you see the little news flash? Afghanistan monetary expenditures this last month, I guess it was, exceeded Iraq expenditures for the first time since 2003.
Oh, yeah. No, that's hideous. But no, I mean, so we're supposed to plan this big offensive, and McChrystal is worried about fighting in the streets. How about not alerting people what the hell are you going to do?
Well, there's that. And then, you know, there's the political problem. I don't know if you saw the spokesman for the Obama administration Defense Department or whatever it was. He was standing there next to Robert Gibbs, who was looking really uncomfortable. And he was given, it was sort of like Peter being asked if he knew Jesus 3 times before the cock crowed. And he said, he was asked like 3 times, given an opportunity to say, well, you know, Hamid Karzai's a great guy and we stand behind him and he's our ally. And you know what? It couldn't come out. The guy couldn't make it come out of his mouth. And finally, Robert Gibbs stepped in and said, well, that's enough for today, boys. I guess we'll leave you to your writing.
Oh, no, snap. That's funny. What?
Yeah, couldn't say, Hey, Hamid Karzai's busting his ass over there. He's a close ally, and working together, we're going to bring peace, freedom, frisbees, and wheat checks to the people of Afghanistan. Could not repeat the standard BS line. That is how bad the relationship is with Hamid Karzai.
Well, no, I just, I mean, come on, he's a creep, that guy. You know, former lobbyist, executive for, what,
Unical. Yeah, he was more of a telex man. He was a transactions guy.
Oh,
he was in acquisitions.
Well, you know, it's another corporate toady that's in so-called in power who's apparently likes the heroin.
Yeah, and you know, I've just got one question: is Karzai Pashtun for Diem? Remember President Diem of Vietnam?
Oh, right. Listen, I have no idea, and what's really frightening is they don't have any idea. These people, I don't know what they think they're doing in Afghanistan and Pakistan. That place is freaking me out. You know they got nuclear weapons there.
Yeah, they do. They do indeed.
You know, and Obama's like, you know, upset and threatening them about they need to do this at another as far as they're extremists. And I heard some Pakistan officials say, well, we don't go after those ones. There's other ones we might go after, but not them ones. I'm sorry to laugh. But you understand what I'm saying? The grand chess match game, whatever, is not going that well. But the same people are suffering. How many people have been on 25 tours by now? I swear to God.
Oh,
what do we have, 5 soldiers left, Bob?
And 2 of those are clerk typists.
Oh, shit, because they all in these fucked up hospitals that we don't hear too much about, rotten. You know about that, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And then, you know, so they're degrading at an alarming rate. I don't know where they're finding new replacements, except Obama got this Hoover economics going in full effect, which is, you don't do anything about unemployment, says the free market, and you just let wages and prices go down together, and eventually output will increase.
And that's a good idea. Why?
I'm just telling you, that's where we're at.
That's the question I was asking earlier. And Joe Bajent says no. Maybe Sandra says no too. Is there anybody out there looking for the next model? And this is more of an organic question. Do we have to wait until the collapse to look for something else that works?
Well, no, because economists obviously are spokespeople and they run numbers for the rich. Because the wage policies are totally detrimental to working people, which is 90% of us, right?
Yeah, and if not 95.
But any discipline who can justify the payouts for the CEOs, the sociopaths, and are able to justify this sort of downward spiral for wages, you know, they're a crock. They need to be run out of academia, and it's a bunch of BS.
Meanwhile, we're waiting for some sort of meaningful alternative. And I don't know. And I honest to God, I don't have the first flipping clue what that alternative is, Sandra.
No, you still got people preaching this market efficiency hypothesis. It's a joke.
Yeah, and see, just shifting gears with you real quick. I have not touched on the Elena Kagan discussion because, frankly, you know, it is what it is. But I did, you know, sort of had a shiver of dread run through me when I was hearing someone talking about her CV, and lo and behold, there she is, University of Chicago.
And how about, listen.
Nothing good comes out of there, Sandra.
No, all horror. This is a horror show there. I mean, from the international relations to economics, it's all really frightening. But what's more frightening about her, let me ask you something. Now, Obama had a wide range of people to pick. why in the F did he have to pick someone who's associated with Goldman Sachs on any level? Explain that to me.
Yeah, at all, ever. Walked past Goldman Sachs' building. Right.
What kind of, are these people just politically
tone deaf? Tone deaf?
Tone deaf, 10 ear. I mean, because I was like, oh, wait, are you telling me home bitch is associated with them too?
Yeah, why not, you know, why not a real live, and, you know, Glenn Greenwald's been out there with all this stuff. Why not a real live, honest-to-God liberal and put him up there and say, do your damnedest?
Oh, no, I know. The thing is, it would never happen, and it's just so weird, but it's not. And I'm looking at what's going on in England just so envious. I realize that, you know, it's not much of a third party, but for goddamn for sure, they actually, you know, did something different there in a system that is dominated by two parties. And I'm sitting back here thinking, oh, my God, we need some sort of third party here in the worst possible way.
But we need one that's viable and want to govern. Because, among other things, Nick Clegg wants to govern.
No, not only that, but it's just, you know, the way our electoral system is, it really is no room. There's no, you know, first past the post. There's no
right, and historically speaking, I've referenced it before, and you're well familiar with it. That was something that was screwed up as just about as early in the history of the constitutional United States as you can get. You know, when they had to fix the vice president, president thing, that's what set the two-party system in motion.
Right away. I mean, you know, the Federalists, you know, they weren't writing that shit thinking about, you know, the two-party business, per se. Yeah, no. I don't know. I just am sort of... Have they started up with the... corporations spending money blatantly yet?
Not yet that I've seen, but yeah, it's out there some.
And let me just shift right over. You know what? Sometimes, if you're a politician, you probably don't want to get into the limelight. Who I'm speaking of is the senator from Walmart. Who is that woman? She's
Blanche Lincoln.
No, that bitch looked tired. I was scared. I'm like, ew. Just on the strength of her whole persona and her look. She's horrible, Bob. Terrible.
And with any luck at all, you know, look, there's two things out there happening. I'm sure the guy that's running against her is not the be-all and end-all of liberalism.
No, sure.
And you can certainly say the same thing about Joe Sestak in Pennsylvania. But like I said last night, you know, this new and this is political upheaval on a grand scale, because organized labor, in a move that I am convinced was really, really not enlightened, hate to call anybody in ally groups dumb, but in a surprisingly unenlightened move, you know, organized labor in Pennsylvania took the wink and the nod from Barack Obama and wholeheartedly and full-throatedly endorsed Arlen Specter. You know, that was a while back, and now, for the first time in this Muhlenberg College poll that my colleague Rick Smith told me about, Joe Sestak is now 5 points ahead of Arlen.
No, listen, I have to say, I will not be surprised if Arlen is sent back, and it's time. That bitch, I'm sorry, because that guy needs to go away. It's been time.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean... he's not that old. I mean, he's not Robert Byrd old.
Oh, no. I don't mean that.
But he's not sharp either. He's lost a lot of edge because, like I said, I've met him in two separate occasions in the last 6 months, and on both occasions he introduced himself to me three times within 15 minutes.
Okay, yeah, no, it's... No, I mean, that in itself is pretty scary. Wow. Jesus. Well, no, he just needs to go just on the strength of the single bullet thing.
Well, there is that.
Oh my God! And in fact, he's been there that long.
And you know, Joe Sestak has done a lot of things right. He was an early co-sponsor of the Clean Water Protection Act, H.R. 1310. So I like that. But you know, he also comes out of the military-industrial complex establishment. This guy's a flippin' admiral, okay?
Yeah, but that's Pennsylvania, though. I mean, that's MRSA country, ain't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, listen.
But I want him to win this primary and stare down Pat Toomey. And
no, you know, the primaries are so, they're really kind of exploding. I realize a lot of that is on the, Tea Party thing, but Jesus, they're really wrecking lives, aren't they? I'm looking at some of these freaks falling, like, dropping like flies.
And they elected a Democrat in protest in West Virginia Tuesday. The teabaggers and the Friends of Fetuses threw out a 28-year West Virginia incumbent Democrat who had he hadn't made life good for himself with some he was exonerated of any ethics wrongdoing by the House Ethics Committee, but who isn't? Unless you're caught with, the dead girl, the live boy, or the fistful of cash, and even the fistful of cash won't do it anymore. But Alan Mollahan got bounced in favor of a primary challenger. And see, this is another one of those cases where the right wing is figuring out stuff way miles ahead of what we do. They put up a primary challenger in the form of Mike Oliverio, whom I know personally and would not trust with a rented dead skunk, and whipped handily a 28-year incumbent. And now he's going to go up against a token right-wing Republican opponent, and the first district in West Virginia is going to have themselves what may be America's first teabagging Democrat. Yeah, I know. Straight to the tequila bottle, huh?
Oh, my God. No, I just, this sort of, I think the election is bound to be different, but I have a feeling that, I don't know what Obama and his peoples are thinking of, but I think a lot of people are sitting on their hands. Because if any of these young people I teach are any indication, they like change what? And huh?
And where is it?
And no voting, okay, basically. That's what that translates into. They're going to go right back to what they usually do,
Right, because they don't see what they were pulled out to. They're not seeing return on investment, to use a market analogy.
No, and these youngins, I don't know what they're facing, like your youngins. You know what I'm saying?
I have cold sweats at 3 a.m.
It's horrible. It's horrible. I'm thinking about my little nieces. They 7, and I'm like, oh my God, I'll be in my dirt nap. And these, I don't know what is, what I'm saying? And that's part of my motivation to even care. It's like these young people I know.
Exactly. I mean, my world changed when I became a grandparent.
Yeah, oh God.
Because on the one hand, that's the closest thing that a human being gets to a vision of immortality.
Right.
But by the same token, what are my grandchildren if the world awaiting them is one in which they revert to, basically the proles?
Well, I think there's so much that can come at them. But the environmental destruction is really wicked. And I don't know if this oil spill will be the last of it. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Seems to be learning any lessons or capitalizing on this politically. Nothing. It's zilch. It's so odd.
And, this is not the last of it. These are little check boxes. Like I said, it's it's not all of one thing. It's this. It's the Kingston coal ash disaster. It's the disaster at Upper Big Branch a month ago, or a little more than a month ago.
All the time.
It's the stock market. It's the ramifications of the right wing assault on viable federal government. Colorado Springs can't mow its grass. That's either a bumper sticker or the follow up to what's the matter with Kansas. Colorado Springs can't mow its grass.
Reversion of the Senate back to pre-1913 is what's working my nerve. You got the senator from Walmart, now you got the bitch from the oil companies. You know what I'm saying? They're just blatant now. The shit is blatant. They don't care. She up there and did that. I'm like, damn. No shame, man. No shame.
Not even debate it. Kill it.
Nothing. Nada.
Just incredible. Kill it. I guess the one thing we can give Senator Lisa Murkowski credit for is having listened to the original Bob Marley version of I Shot the Sheriff. Kill it before it grows.
Wow, yeah, no. I mean, that's that kind of stuff. And it just seems to be I guess that's the name of the game. But the Senate is well undemocratic, full stop. Hey, listen, so I guess I'll let you go. But, oh, yeah, you don't watch the basketball. I have to check out this game and see if, you know, he further falls apart, LeBron.
Well, you know, I heard a rumor earlier today, and that is that once the Cavs are out of it, LeBron is, I mean, you want a rumor among rumors. Once the Cavs are out of it, LeBron is off to Chicago, and so is John Calipari from Kentucky.
That's a good one. Listen, you know, anything to end the teeth. I was looking at Mike Brown. I'm like, dude, he is scaring me.
I know.
You know, and he is the scariest ass coach I've ever seen. I mean, I don't mean just how he looks, but the scared coaches, you know. Coach, like how he coaches.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. This isn't that cool sort of that sort of mafia cool that Pat Riley pulled off, or the Zen master, you know, putting a spider web back together. That the what's his name out at the Lakers, formerly the Bulls. Why can't I remember his name now?
Oh no, Phil Jackson.
Yeah, Phil Jackson. That no. He does. No, 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 no. He's
so
something entirely.
Is being run by some 25-year-old, and it's pathetic. You know, I just think the whole thing is really quite creepy. They don't move without this fool, and he's breaking down and they acting right, so I'll be pulling for Boston, you know I will.
Oh, got to.
I'm not even a Boston fan, but I gotta pull for him.
Yeah, just sheerly out of
because he can take his ass to New York. Go to that sorry ass team. Have fun. That is the worst-run organization in the NBA, New York. Come on.
Oh,
terrible.
And yeah, I mean, I've got listeners who are diehard Knicks fans, and yeah. Every now and then I just get these emails saying, oh, what the hell?
How many decades has it been? When you had Patrick, we make a lot, but we spend a lot?
Yeah, Ewing.
you know. So so that's all I got for the sports, except unless you want to give me what you think about the expanding college situation.
Oh, that's just insane.
I knew you would have an opinion.
But another one of the funsies coming out, though, it has been officially announced that opening day in Oxford, Mississippi will feature a match between Boise State and Ole Miss.
Shut up.
Oh, that's going to be a fun one.
Oh, wow, that's it. Well, listen, that's interesting. Well, Boise, shit, that's a good team.
Well, but they're one of the ones that's going to be locked out. And look, and this is another one of those moments where the national metaphor translates to, I mean, you know, you want to see what corporate conglomeration does?
Yeah.
Well, look at what's going on in college football. They're literally going to destroy the game.
It's nasty, I know.
In the name of creating four Uber conferences. And that will leave, I mean, if Boise State and Fresno State are not already out in the cold, they will be freezing to damn death. And so will my Mountaineers, and so will Connecticut.
Well, no, so I heard someone make an interesting comment. They said, shit, all them Catholic schools ought to form a pact.
Yeah, the Papal Conference.
With Notre Dame, you know, and Rutgers, and you know, all those.
Well, Rutgers is a state school, but, yeah, Boston College and Notre Dame. And
isn't Vanderbilt Catholic?
No. But you know, they're talking. Somebody floated a rumor of Vandy being invited to the Big Ten because of their grade point average. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Well, no, but see, I guess that's going to go down. That sounds really ugly. And what's Missouri doing?
That I can't get a handle on that because it's either true or it's not true. You know, the deal that Missouri was given in being invited into the Big 12. Was one of the ugliest little slaps in the face that's happened in the history of recent college athletics. They took like a half of a pay. They took a pay cut that was like half of what the big name schools in the Big 12 get just to get in there. They get half of what anybody else gets. And so I wouldn't be, if I was Missouri, I'd be anybody else. Yeah. And you know, look, Iowa's in the Big 10. Why not Missouri?
Well, yeah, it sounds like, I mean, on top of that, you know, they keep talking about how there's going to be a lockout in the NFL.
Oh, in the NFL? Yeah, no, there will be. I'm convinced of that.
To me, that's another example of the capitalism, you know, cannibalizing stuff. Why in the F? That is the most popular sport on goddamn earth.
Yeah.
Why? The Greek, are they that disgusting that they can't give these players what they deserve because they break their bodies down and they're through, yet they still want more?
And look, you know, did you see Sandra, the SI story on Ben Roethlisberger, and more importantly, the theorizing about head injuries in college football, in football in general?
Yeah. So are they trying to say that fool is making these mistakes because he's brain damaged, right?
Yeah, and some of his conduct fits it, but also some of his conduct fits spoiled asshole too.
Well, no, but. You know, I can go with that argument because that, you know.
And dumbass is still riding the motorcycle without a helmet.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay, well, he says, yeah, okay, well, yeah, I guess he's concussed, like, permanently. Jesus. No, I be tripping on the older dudes. When I say older, I mean 2 years older than me and you.
Yeah, the ones that can't walk without canes.
And he's got Alzheimer at 49 and shit, you know, horrible stuff. And then no benefits.
Right, and you know, it's a really, really silent story. And you know, going back to the college thing real quick, again, before the entire, you know, the half the audience is tuned down, oh fuck, he's talking about sports again. But the fact of the matter is, this is real, and this is another one of those consumptive capitalism moments. Because what you've got are four Uber conference, you've got, you know, the you've got the SEC, you've got the Pac-10, the Big Ten, and the Big 12, and they are looking, and they're looking to consolidate themselves in such a that they, and you know, we saw it with the expansion of the ACC by pulling Virginia Tech and Miami and Boston College out of the Big East.
Oh,
you know, how's that working out, guys? But they're, you know, it's a model of capitalism that's on a really easy to grasp scale.
No,
because these conferences are eating each other to the detriment of the very thing that keeps them alive.
Yeah, no, it's really incredible. And along with them wanting to expand the basketball tournament, too, I'm still...
Oh, that one makes me sick.
No, that's incredible. I can't think of anything that's going to, you know, kill that. Then making it, what, is it 94 they want to go to?
Yeah, something... You're right.
Oh, my God, come on.
At that point, it's NHL.
Oh, it's nothing. It's just gibberish, you know? Because then you're going to be complaining about the 95th team that deserved to get in, right? What the hell?
And they'll sue.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, listen, I'm only going to talk about sports because, you know, it's not like you said the lines were light tonight, so I figured we could...
Yeah, they were, and I appreciate it. No, I wasn't gooning on you. I was... You know, the fact of the matter is, part of the reason liberals can't have such a hard time getting traction is we don't talk about shit that matters, and by matters, you know, it's a fluid term, but we don't talk about shit that matters to, you know, Emery and Eileen, you know, Joe Sixpack, soccer mom.
Oh, yeah, no, and listen, the sports thing for me is just, I mean, I just like it because I used to play it when I was young, and I always watched it with my mother. You know what I mean? It's just been sort of there, and it's also very entertaining because it's a window to, you know, America that needs to be paid attention to. I'm sorry.
Well, right, and, you know, for me, those football Saturdays with the Mountaineers, it's like some sort of religious ceremony with me because I've always got an open seat and a cold can of beer for my dad. Because that was bonding.
Well, I tell you, my bonding was them short shorts. We ain't talked about it. I got fond memories.
Oh, no. I ain't saying nothing.
Okay, listen, I'll let you go, so have a good evening.
Later, Sandra. Take care.
Bye
now. Oh, the Gesher religion shorts of the long-gone days of the NBA. My God. It's about 17 minutes before the hour. We're pretty close to being out of the program. Just another reminder, because things are running very, very slowly along those lines. Our buddy Glenn has kindly offered to match up to $250 of contributions for the horn, if you will match the other $250. Right now we are at 80. So we've got, $170 to go. And if you can, it would be great if you would match Glenn's offer. by end of program tomorrow evening. So that means we've got 24 hours and 17 minutes to pull it all together. And I wanted to share an email with you, since this is optimism night on the horn. Following on what Joe Bagent wrote, this is something I actually got yesterday. Comes in from Brad. Sweet release. What sweet surrender it is to let go of all faith and hope for anything like a future for the United States. The continent has been raped of all its beauty, resources, wildlife, and heritage. The waters are being poisoned and rendered useless. The mountains are being blown to bits. Alas, there will come an end to all this satanic waste, and that time will be after every square centimeter has been turned into a lifeless wasteland. Among the seemingly endless list of logical fallacies can be found one particular fallacy given a name so unfortunate as to make it hard to believe. It's real, though. You can look it up, although I'm sure you know of it. Reductio ad Hitlerum. This is the fallacy of playing the Nazi card as a tactic for building a case against an opponent. When I look around, however, the comparisons to pre-Nazi Germany are right in my face. In the late 1920s and early 1930s, I have to believe that the Austrians, Poles, and Germans looked around and saw it coming. After all, those with the means to do so fled while the getting was good. Those who could not flee, you know. This time the fascism is orders of magnitude more sophisticated and insidious. It's all woven throughout the fabric of our entire computer networking and media. It has no single dictator, just a bunch of corporate pukes in suits who will never see the inside of a prison cell in part because they own the damn prison cells. You can't include the government in this list, however, because there is no such thing. This thing we call our government is merely the second law of magic, namely misdirection. The first law, of course, is to never reveal the secret to the trick. Am I proud to be an American? Shit, no. For one thing, I have no right to say that I'm proud of something I had no part in creating in the first place. I'm here only by sheer accident of birth. I had no say in the matter. I'm proud of my musical accomplishments. I'm proud I don't smoke tobacco anymore. For that matter, if there's anything I think we could use a lot less of in this country, it's blind, meaningless nationalism. About the days when all could... Who could... Professional reader here, don't try this at home. About the days when all who could escape the horror they saw coming round the Teutonic Mountain, think on this. They had some place to go. Many of them took steerage to this country. This time, there will be no place to go. Carry on, Brad. William says, when we talk about the cannibalistic human-eating machine of great hunger, never full or satisfied, called corporate capitalism, there's no escape even for the human of true heart and soul. Here in Hollywood, California, you cannot drive a block without a constant reminder of some forsaken product. They're on display everywhere in the form of billboards and building signs, golden arches, light-up arrows, all and much more, all at the same time to the point of normal through familiarity, and all with one's own personal soundtrack and backbeat in the form of high-powered car radios or just the roar and rumble of moving machinery at work, which we call transport. This is as insidious as the TV set. Ask anyone what they just heard or saw a second ago, and look and listen to blank stares and crickets. Have we become desensitized? Absolutely. You in West Virginia have the insane pleasure of listening to explosions clearing mountains and the shake of your house. There seems to be no escape and no end to the deliberate destruction of mankind, animals, and the planet. And for what? Money and power. In my 61 years, I have only seen things become worse. It is truly difficult to locate the hope. Replace hope, says William, with stop. Stop. Yeah, stop. A little bit ago, I was talking some about the land of my birth, Alabama. And I was talking about the fact that at the same time that this hell and damnation is washing up on their shores, the conservatism that places like Alabama so rabidly espouse is precisely why that goddamn goo is flowing up on their shores. God-awful, God-forsaken goo. And yeah, that's not oil washing up on those sugar-white sand beaches of the northern Gulf of Mexico. No, no. That's conservatism rolling up. You want a great example? There is a wonderful op-ed piece over at BuzzFlash.com, our buddies at BuzzFlash. Headline, Alabama Teachers Union undermines education by getting in bed with creationists. Go read it. It's too twisted to try to explain right now, except to share with you this advertisement from the Alabama Republican Repiglican gubernatorial primary race. This is an attack smear ad from Roy Ten Commandments Moore against Bradley Byrne. I'm thinking of this segment as the Byrne identity. Bradley Byrne. Listen, this isn't a joke. This is nothing from The Onion, okay? This is real. This is what passes for politics in the Deep South.
Bradley Byrne was a Democrat.
Now he's a Republican.
On the school board, Byrne supported teaching evolution, said evolution best explains the origin of life, even recently said the Bible is only...
Did you hear the question mark? Said evolution is the best explanation for the origins of life? Because there's an answer implicit in that question mark. When everybody knows that the origin of life comes from a planet that was formed that stands on the back of an elephant, that stands on the back of a turtle, that stands on the back of a turtle, that stands on the back of a turtle, and it's turtles all the way down. Wait a minute, I've got the wrong religion. That's Hinduism, and that's heresy, and that'll send you to hell in Alabama. No, no, no. Everybody knows that the earth was made in 7 days, just exactly 7 days, not six, not eight, 7 days. That's the best explanation for the origin of life on earth, and God making himself a little Adam out of the dirt and the clay and a breathing on him, and then deciding that he'd done put too many ribs in and yanking a rib out after he'd knocked him out with some sort of cosmic knockout drops and the cosmic Nicky Finn, and then popping that rib around some more clay and putting some boobies and a vagina on it and calling it, whoa, man, and it's Eve, and she screwed the goose, and everybody's born under the cloud of original sin, and we all suffer and die on the planet, and that there is the best explanation for the origins of life on Earth. Let's go back.
Bradley Byrne was a Democrat.
Now he's a Republican.
On the school board, Byrne supported teaching evolution, said evolution best explains the origin of life.
Don't you love the little guitar in the background and the squeaky, rusty barn door hinge effect they got going on? Sounds like they're all just sitting out there after they got done having sex with the farm animals, talking about that liberal Bradley Byrne.
Even recently said the Bible is only partially true.
Candidate Byrne changed his tune.
Legislator Byrne voted to raise property taxes, income taxes, the sales tax, and even tax health insurance premiums.
Byrne claims he won't do it again.
Bradley.
Well, damn, you know, maybe if Alabama had some tax increases, maybe they wouldn't have to go a-begging the federal government to federalize the National Guard to deal with that there oil spill. Dumbasses. Conservatism is about to wash up on the shores of Alabama and utterly destroy their entire fishing, shrimping, and oystering and tourism industries. That is conservatism washing up on the beach, baby. That ain't oil.
Byrne, another liberal blowing in the wind.
Trying to look conservative.
Trying to look conservative. When we all know that you got to be conservative to get reelected in Alabama. Can't have no liberals. Jesus criminy, they are attacking people for doing something as prosaic as suggesting
that a myth is a myth. A myth.
Yes?
No. A myth. That's where American politics is now, especially the rabid, rotten, filthy, conservative politics of the Deep South. I grieve for the land of my birth. Just another liberal blowing in the wind. Well, I guess, you know what? I guess the next time that wind blows, that hurricane wind, that hurricane season starts on June the 1st, by the way, that hurricane wind blows some of that oil up on the Alabama coastline and maybe up Mobile Bay and up the Alabama River estuary and that sort of thing and into the swamps and bayous down around Bayou LaBeouf and so forth. I guess they'll be glad that they're rock-solid conservatives that won't raise taxes and don't have the wherewithal to deal with a disaster that befalls them and ruins a big chunk of their own state's economy. But at least they're conservative and believe in Jeebus. Hallelujah, glory! I got the strychnine in one hand. Somebody pass me a snake! Shoot. I know all of Alabama's not that dumb. But a whole bunch of it is. Just is. Kind of reminded me of this. That's right, Jerry. Just walk away. Just walk away. Sit there and let these hidebound conservatives drive themselves into the damn dirt. Until such time as Alabama has gotten over the sickness that is conservatism. And then, because we're Americans, we'll help them back up. But then we have to have the fortitude to drive from the midst of anything approaching civilized society the first dead from the neck up conservative that dares to start talking about conservative values, because conservative values are rolling up on Alabama's beautiful sugar white shoreline. And that is the truth. That's also the show for tonight. Sure has been fun. Glad you were along. We'll be here tomorrow night as well with lots more to get into and get onto and get around. Thanks to all of you who helped keep this going with your contributions and your shared efforts to make sure that this little experiment continues. Thanks to everyone associated with the horn, from Lottie, the moderator in the chat room, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy. My Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne of OsborneInc.com, OsborneInc.com. Both at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and at OsborneInc.com, there are links whereby you can go and vote for Matt to win a Netroots Nation scholarship, the Netroots Nation in Las Vegas. He's not doing bad at all, Matt isn't. He's 73 votes behind number 3. You can get him into the number 2 spot easily. Please help. My head writer is David in Tennessee. The hardest working, bravest people I know are the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org.
And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
We as liberals have got to learn to speak in the idiom of the nation.
By God, Virginia,
and you know what? Sports is our national metaphor.
Well,
that's why when Obama gives a good speech, somebody will inevitably say, well, he hit that one out of the park.
Right. Or, for that matter, it'd be a better example, but if it wasn't for sports, the only time a Hunter Thompson and Rich Nick Nixon had probably wouldn't have had the same result, but...
Oh, I do suspect we have a busy little afternoon ahead of us. Or evening, or morning, or whatever it is, wherever you are. Good morning,
He writes nothing flattering about Richard.
Because this is the miracle of the intertube. And I'm Bob, and this is the horn. This is Conversation Radio, in case you're not familiar with the concept.
And a few other things.
I make assumptions sometimes, and that was forever, but they haven't. We need to start
know what it's all about here.
You know, this isn't, high rush, this is welfare from busted knuckle. I just want to say, make a pig pen dittos to you. Thank you. Welfare, that's enough about you. Let's talk about me. My God, have you seen my mansion? I have 26,000 square feet and a cat.
Kind of bashing people.
This isn't that kind of radio.
We're probably not watching.
No. This is conversation radio. This is your opportunity
to
engage in extended dialogue, extended conversation. And it ain't about me. It's about you.
Everybody's united as one in those.
It is, quite frankly, one of the boldest little experiments in radio that has taken place in this country in eons.
Each other during a sport event because no one knows or cares at that point. What's more important about is supporting your team.
We've got a lot on the table for this evening.
I've got to take you somewhere else since you are a legitimate, bona fide Pennsylvanian.
And I'm hard pressed to figure out where to start, but
based on
how
things are working out. Is it safe to say that Arlen Specter has reached a place in his life where he can hide his own Easter eggs? No, he's slipping. Arlen's brain is going sideways.
Actually, we've got two of them.
He introduced himself to me three times.
I knew I'd forgotten something. That had to be annoying. My apologies.
Thank you, News Ninja Susan. Simple email.
Kill the stream!
All better now? I hope so.
Sometimes things just, I get ahead of myself, things get ahead of me, whatever. But anyway, we got a fun little show going on. Because we got fun stories, we got dumb stories, we got silly stories, and we've got stories that they are the horror we have come to expect. And to say that it is troubling, at the very least, is, look, the Gulf is the Gulf. The Gulf is gone. At this point in time, even BP has been forced to admit that it really doesn't have a clue. Now, we've known they didn't have a clue for quite some time, but it's still a little bit surprising to see them actually admitting it. That gusher in the Gulf may actually prove to be humanity's open doorway into hell. And no, there's no guy with a surprising resemblance to the ancient Greek renderings of Dionysus down there. There's just lots of toxic goo that may torment us forevermore. I saw a story posted over at Michael Moore's website earlier today. I found it via our dear friend, good friend, and friend of long standing, Bart Kopp. Over at michaelmoore.com, under latest news, dated yesterday, Gulf oil spill turning unbelievably bad. And the photo of the poor dead dolphin lying on the sugar white sands of the Gulf. Makes you just want to march some BP executives right down there next to them. It does. Of course, I'm only using a metaphor. I'm not really saying that we should march any BP executives right down there next to the dolphin and let them get all dolphin-like. I'm using a Brad Goering metaphor. You know, I have to pay him a penny every time I say metaphor now, because he trademarked it when he advocated the open season on liberals. Which reminds me, I got an email from our buddy Jack, who is down Louisiana way. And Jack said, I'm looking for his email now. It'll only take me a minute. There's Jack. He said, dude, this blew me away. The segment and clip you had about hunting liberals just blew me away. I had seen an article or two earlier today about the subject, but I had no idea of the hunting reference racist-wise, even though I was raised in the South. I usually can detect this kind of speech and kind of feel a bit ignorant for not immediately getting it. The fact that the Facebook post was taken down could be taken as an admission of guilt on what it was meant. I do think that we need to be careful about reading things into every word we hear, though. Absolutely. But the point here, nobody was reading anything into anything. I mean, I'm not taking issue with Jack, but no, these were the guy's actual, really honest-to-God words. It wasn't a metaphor. What he meant was it was a joke. It was a sick joke and a twisted joke. And just to follow up so that you'll know, the origin of that liberal hunting business comes from old things that used to get faxed around, or they were found tacked to bulletin boards in the days before faxes, back when wingnuts had to work a lot harder to spread their hate and their filth. And the origin of the open season hunting on liberals takes its genesis from an old thing that used to circulate through the South, in which rules for hunting Negroes were posted as a real haul, 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 yuck, yuck, and often had the smell of that ditto machine kind of thing going on. I remember it well. I remember seeing it. Let's see. Packs of no more than 32 bloodthirsty dogs may be used in hunting them. it shall be illegal to hunt them in a watermelon patch or at a fried chicken restaurant, as this is considered hunting over a baited field. You see, thereby working in the ethos attached to hunting at the same time as making a joke about hunting black folks. Really, that is the long history. And you know what? That long history also tells you